Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio. This is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
Have no place to go, darling. Have no place to go. Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going. Yes, I'm going. Goodbye, baby. Yes, I'm going. Yes, I'm going.
Hi, 610.
Can I say something real quick?
Wait, go ahead, because I can't figure out how to use headphones.
Okay. It, the word, which you helped me with, is sensitive. I was trying to think of the word for Dave and Steve because I said they would like Big Little Lies, but they're emotional and they're very sensitive.
Dave's not sensitive.
He is. He's in tune with his.
Are you sensitive? You're not really sensitive.
I think I'm.
What's the last thing you cried about? Cry all the time.
When he just saw you, he was overcome.
I just saw Pat Brady in the parking lot, started crying. I was hoping he wasn't coming in today.
He started crying, too, when he realized he was.
I think it was last night when Brian McIntosh broke the Northwestern single-game assist record.
See, that's what I'm talking about. He's not sensitive. He's sensitive
about
sports. He's sensitive about sports. He's not sensitive about life stuff.
Yes, I am.
He's a very family-oriented guy. I think he's very sensitive. And
he carries around a pin in his pocket so he can prick himself so he can cry when he needs to.
It's not about crying, Steve.
Oh, yeah, it is.
Okay.
Okay.
When I walked outside Sunday morning and it was below zero, I started crying. Yeah.
That was because your tear ducts were frozen.
This is the kind of conversation that Milt Rosenberg would have just shaken his head and walked out of the room.
Right. Good evening.
For those of you who missed this, Milt Rosenberg died Monday night?
Overnight, yes. So, yes.
Monday night?
He went into the hospital New Year's
Tuesday
Day.
Tuesday night.
Yeah, and passed away Tuesday.
And Milt lived an incredible life, and we're going to play back a couple of Milt clips a little bit later on. One of my favorite things from yesterday is Steve Bertrand brought this up, is what a little gossip Milt was. There wasn't a single time I walked into the building where he didn't go, you know what's going on. Tell me what's going on.
And you know what's funny? And I worked with him for many years, and I didn't know that part because that was not my relationship.
Well, he wouldn't do it. He'd do it with guys.
Right. And so Bertrand said that he said to me yesterday after you guys had that exchange, he went, oh, I wish I wouldn't have used that word. I said, "Why was it the wrong word to use?" He went, oh, well, no.
No, he was an absolute gossip.
It was correct. But he phrased it well. He said, Milt would get stuff out of you, but he wouldn't really divulge a lot.
Oh, he never gave up anything.
Yeah.
Well, part of the reason was he didn't know anything. He would collect information from everybody else.
Right.
He was so brilliant. And I used to tell him fake stuff.
I did.
I'd bring him over and
I'd go, Milt.
Just to test him?
Come here, Milt.
Yeah.
And I'd make something up. And then like 15 minutes later, I'd go back and go, Milt wasn't true.
Oh, God. He was always just so respectful and just... I mean,
nah, he's a fraud.
To me.
No, he was a great guy.
Yeah.
He was a great guy and a genius,
yeah.
But he loved, a little give and take.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to give him a hard time and go, you know, everybody knows you're a fraud.
You did not.
You put a bunch of books in your office, big shot academic. Nobody's buying that. And he'd giggle.
You know, he loved you. He loved that the show where he would have you and Kathy and Judy, John Williams. I think you would.
Well, I told you, we had talked about, he always wanted to do a show together, and we had talked about doing a show called Smart and Dumber.
Oh, yeah, you did.
And Milt would be the one that was smart, in case anyone's not clear on that.
Oh, that's perfect.
But we got some clips later. Milt Rosenberg, and we're putting together a special show in Milt's memory and coming soon. And, listen, it's sad, obviously, when anybody is gone. But what a life.
Mm-hmm. Oh, my God.
You know, the great thing about Milt, too, is he showed that we could be smart on the radio. Everything doesn't have to be a joke. We can talk about smart things and have smart conversations. And that's what I always enjoyed as a listener of Extension 720.
Well, I remember one of the dumbest things I ever said to him after being here probably 5 years. I was still doing an afternoon show, and I said, you ever think about changing the name of the show? Extension 720. It's a little nerdy. You ever think about calling it maybe the Milt Rosenberg Show? He goes, 35 years. It seems to be working.
I know, right?
And he walks away.
My favorite was...
Mic drop.
My favorite was his intro to every night. He would sit down, and they would give him the cue, and he'd do the...
Oh, yeah. Adjust the mic.
Good evening.
Good evening.
and welcome to
this evening. We will discuss the Peloponnesian Wars.
Yes,
and Urkel.
Literally, that's exactly right.
All right, we got to get the top six at six. Let's roll right now.
From the Steve Cochran Auditorium in the lovely Sunrise Hotel, it's time to get your kicks.
Get your kicks. Get your kicks.
Get your kicks. With the top six at six. Sponsored by American Weathermakers, the home of the 60-Minute Man.
President Trump declined to promise he would speak with a special counsel. Ask Pat Brady about this, because, you know, Pat used to chase the bad guys. Can the president or anybody else just say, I'm not going to do it? I don't know that it's been legally tested with the president. You know, Bill Clinton did it. Clinton did it by, like, Skype, before Skype, right? Conference call, conference video or something? Wasn't he in his own office with his own attorney? He wasn't? All right, you're going to clear all this up for me. And George Bush also had a special counsel testimony. I think that was early on in his presidency after Iraq began. But anyway, Trump yesterday said something to the effect of he's not sure. And knowing what Trump says off the cuff, I don't think any lawyer in his right mind would readily allow Donald Trump to just go in and let it fly. So that's on the docket, on the agenda today. And House Republicans have proposed a hardline immigration policy yesterday. That clashes with the president's talk the day before of a bipartisan deal. Trump then tweeted out that you had to have a wall. Again, I brought this up yesterday. I will show you the math today about why a wall is a really bad idea and how you could actually turn the wall into a job fair.
Big time.
And acting Chicago Public Schools CEO Janice Jackson appointed a Chicago Board of Education member to a top district job yesterday. That's a conflict. There's a state law that says board members can't take CPS posts for a year after leaving their board seat. School board member Arnaldo Rivera's 37, former aide to the mayor, announced his resignation from the school board to become the district's chief operating officer. So, you know, this has to be cleaned up. What do we know?
Welcome to Chicago is all I can say. She is. Well, it's an appointed position. It should probably be an elected position. We should start there. This is definitely going to be a problem, I would think. The board's added another public hearing before its January 4th meeting to talk about the change. And that's going to allow board members to actually talk about this and possibly to be employed by the board itself.
And if you know a millennial, next, if you know a millennial, you may want to tell them they're moving to Wisconsin. Wisconsin is recruiting Illinois millennials. The campaign's message in social media online and even on L-Train ads. And in Chicago area health clubs, restaurants, and bars is Wisconsin offers lower rents, shorter commutes, and a better quality of life for adults. Delusional
millennials.
The adjective here, or the word is delusioned. Is delusioned a word?
Disillusioned.
Oh, disillusioned.
Disillusioned millennials.
It still sounds
or
funky to me.
Delusional millennials.
Yes, I was an English major. Milt's rolling over right now.
Right.
Disillusioned millennials to go to Wisconsin because life will be better there. Governor Rauner has hit J.B. Pritzker with a new commercial tying him to Rod Blagojevich. Remember last spring, when those stories came out that Pritzker and Rod Blagojevich, about 3 weeks before the FBI took him away, Pritzker was lobbying for the treasurer's job.
Yes, he was.
And Blagojevich was trying to negotiate, you know, for the right amount of cash, maybe I can make you a senator.
Yeah. Negotiate being the key word there.
Yeah. And
strong-arming.
Pritzker seemed to say, no, I want to be the treasurer. Anyway, that's all in the new Rauner commercial. I'm sorry, I dropped a piece of paper a little quickly there. It's all in a new Rauner commercial, and then Pritzker had a pre-planned response to it that's already out as well. So we'll cover that when we get to Mr. Edelstein, Mr. Brady in about an hour. And finally, we got extra paper. The mother of the H&M kid model that wore that coolest monkey in the jungle hoodie, this is a little African-American kid, says she was not upset over the ad, that her child has done tons and tons of ads, and that's just one of them. People needs to get over it.
Yeah, she said she was there during the photo shoot, approved the final pictures, and said doesn't see a problem. She put an Instagram picture of she and her little boy up yesterday. He's not wearing the sweatshirt, but
I don't think it's, you know, it's a question of whether or not she's a good mom, right?
No, not
it's
at
just
all.
A question of whether or not you understand that it's 2018 and a little African-American boy wearing a coolest monkey in the jungle shirt is going to make the internet burn.
Right. She said, stop crying wolf all the time. It's an unnecessary issue.
Well, she's not wrong. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, she's wrong. So
What?
You got to live in the internet world, whether you like it or not. Top Six is brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and Cooling, the 60-Minute Men. Back to the seventh floor. Mary with the cars on a beautiful morning. You're going to be surprised how warm it is outside when you go outside this morning. And I'm going to get some rain and wind today, but pretty decent.
What to see, what's out at the show, oh, I need to know the place and when. But there's one guy on Kian's Cochran show, and what he says will make us stay or go. He is Nick at Night, DiGiulio. He knows what shows are good, what's stinking. He's the only one who's in the know. I need to know what Nick is thinking.
Good morning, Nick.
We'll
get to some quickie movie stuff, but I want to spend the balance of our time here, over the majority of our time, I should say, talking about Milt. Milt Rosenberg, as we mentioned the other day, a couple minutes ago, passed away the other day. And Nick had pretty much nightly encounters with him.
Every Friday, I would follow him, his show, because I would have Friday and Saturday and Sundays when I did the weekends. My first show of each weekend was Friday night at 11, following Extension 720, so I would see him and cross paths with him at least once a week for years.
And usually more than that, because people don't know, Milt worked very hard. And Milt would usually come in early, and I mean real early. Yes. He was here during the day.
Yep.
And he would go and have some dinner and get a little pop before work, get the blood flowing. And then often he would be here after he was done.
Mm-hmm.
Well into Steve and Johnny time. Now
let me tell you a quick story. I told it on my show earlier, but when I first started doing the Friday night show, I learned a lesson really quickly. I made the mistake of walking into Studio A Combo during a commercial break while Milt was in there with his guests.
And
I went in to that secret room. Remember in A Combo, there was that wall that you could push in?
That's
where there was a filing cabinet where I kept my stuff, and I needed to get something to prep for the show that night. And I walk in, and Milt just looks at me, and he goes, "Can I help you?" And I go, "Oh, I just need to get something." He goes, "Oh, you need to get something right now." I said, "Yes, be quick.
Be quick."
I immediately,
be quick and
like,
be
oh,
gone.
God, I just made a horrible mistake. And so I run, push the secret door in, go to the filing cabinet, get what I need to get, and start to walk out. He goes, "Did you get what you needed?" And I said, "Yes, I did. Thank you." And then I walk out. And as I walk out, the producer at the time, I'm trying to remember who the producer was, said to me, "Don't walk in when Milt is doing the show." And so that was a very early lesson. It was like from 9 to 11 p.m., you did not walk into A Combo.
Unless you were invited. If you're invited, fine. Right. But don't surprise him.
Exactly. Exactly right. And that was one of the many lessons that I learned from him. And also, this is, you know, Dan Shugrue, my producer. He produced Steve and Johnny, who would work four nights a week with him. And their show started at 11 o'clock. And Dan learned his lesson as well, because if they had a prep heavy show that he had to set some stuff up for Steve and Johnny, he'd come in at 8:30 p.m. do the prep, so he didn't have to go in there between 9 and 11.
That's awesome.
Yeah, well, you know, you understand the territory and you respect the territory.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever had a problem with this, but Milt was not a fan of casual wardrobe.
No.
So one of the times I was a guest on a show, when I was doing the afternoon show, I'd played golf during the day. I came to work in shorts and a golf shirt. I went out to dinner with some friends, hung out, and then showed up on Milt's show in shorts.
Oh.
I walked in. He looked me up and down. Mm-hmm. I mean, visually, like just up and down. Didn't even try to hide it. And he goes, "Do you own trousers?"
Funny, we still ask that sometimes.
Yeah, of course.
I have to say this. You know, I made him laugh a bunch of times, which I thought was a big accomplishment, you know, during our exchanges. But one of the greatest things ever was he complimented me on my knowledge of movies. He complimented me on my intelligence.
Yeah, how about that?
And when you get and I'm an idiot, and when you get like a compliment from Milt Rosenberg about something that you have good. Now he was talking about my knowledge of film, and it got to the point where, like, if he was talking about film on his show, he would actually mention, you know, if it was a Friday night show, he would mention, well, the guest or the host who follows this show, I will ask him if that is actually true.
Right. He did that. He would do that, Nick, but he would do that with all of us, too. I did his news every night, and there was some occasion, you know, we'd take a day off. He'd go, I don't know who's doing the news, but here they are.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You had to earn your credit.
Yes, you did. Yes. You had to earn your name.
He was the best. He was an amazing, his legacy, obviously, over 40 years. He worked up until the day he died.
Yeah. Oh, he would have been. He would have been still working.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No question about it. He was. He was amazing, and to have worked with him, and to have been his colleague for as many years as I was, it was an absolute honor. Absolutely.
There was a general perception, and it sort of goes with the territory, that Milt was a pompous jerk at times, and you had to get to know Milt to know that wasn't the case. He was intimidating because he was that smart, and he used that that academic cachet as a weapon at times, and that to keep those away that he didn't want to talk to, and also do what he needed to do and do what he wanted to do in a manner in which he wanted to do it. But I can tell you, for anybody that thought Milt was a pompous ass, that's a term that I've heard used, you couldn't be more wrong. He was completely approachable,
very,
loved give and take, and liked nothing better than when you got him. Mm-hmm. He'd get that little smile on his face like, yeah, you're right, I am being a jerk. So, you know, look, we miss him, and we will miss him, but we should all be so lucky to have that kind of run and to leave this earth at 92 with everybody saying things about you that are fun or funny or respectful or endearing.
And he's left behind so much stuff, and I know that on the website we have a lot of it archived, and I know that Todd Manley sent out an email saying that they're putting together a special show.
Tonight!
It's on tonight.
Tonight at 8 o'clock. We will have the Milt Rosenberg thing. Will you look at that email and tell me what it's called? Because they have a name for it.
I think it's called Remembering Milt.
That would make sense. Tonight at 8 o'clock on 720 WGN.
That's appointment radio right there. No question about it.
So more on that later. All right. Give me two words on Phantom Thread.
Two words?
Yep.
Okay. One of the best movies of the year.
That's the new Daniel Day-Lewis movie. The Commuter. Give me two words.
Neeson Train.
Okay. Paddington 2. Not Paddington 1. Paddington Bear, the sequel.
There was a one?
I think it's Paddington 2. Now it's personal.
Paddington was a big hit, man. It made a lot of money.
Yeah.
Paddington 2, two words, animated bear.
There you go. I love the scene in Paddington 1 where he goes, I have a lot of skills, and I'll use those skills. I know where you are. I'll come there, and I'll hug you. And Proud Mary?
Taraja with a gun.
Right, there you go. Now, this is what I'm looking forward to. You're going to reveal your parents' top 10 movies of 2017.
Yes. Now, the reason I'm doing this is because I have my list pretty much done, but I'm revealing it on my show first Sunday morning, or Sunday night into Monday morning. But I figured I'd give you a top 10 since my parents go to the movies. You know, I go to the movies with my parents every Saturday, and I asked them to put their heads together. We talked a little bit about it, and I compiled their top 10 favorite movies of the year.
And for those of you who don't know, Milt takes his mom and dad to a movie every week. Or Milt, I'm sorry, Nick takes his mom. Nick, if Milt took his mom and dad to a movie, that would be news. Nick takes his mom and dad to a movie every weekend. And this is the collection of movies from their, I assume, post-movie comments that you've determined. And
we had a little conversation about their favorites, and this is the top 10.
And I think you're going to be surprised at some of the selections.
Okay, number 10 is Logan, the latest Wolverine movie. Number 9 is Downsizing with Matt Damon when he gets all shrunk down.
Yep.
Number 8, this one actually, my mom won this argument. My dad liked it but didn't love it, but my mom said, no, it's great. And that's War for the Planet of the Apes.
That's hilarious.
That's the one that made me laugh.
Yeah. Number 7, The Big Sick.
Mm-hmm.
Number 6, It scared the hell out of my mom.
Wow.
Number 5, Lady Bird.
Okay.
Number 4, Baby Driver.
I love that your parents love Baby Driver.
Well, my dad adored that movie. I mean, they both loved it.
Because there's a hipness to that movie that I would think generationally might be a problem, but no, they loved it.
Yeah, they did. Number 3, Darkest Hour, the Winston Churchill movie. My dad was really high on that one. Number two, Three Billboards Outside Ebbing, Missouri.
And
number 1, their favorite movie of the year, and this wasn't even close. This was by a landslide. They love this movie. And that's Wonder with Julia Roberts
that's
and
good
Owen
movie.
Wilson.
Oh, I thought you were going to say Wonder Woman.
That's a good movie. No, Wonder Woman didn't make the list.
God, I can't believe that. Loved it. Well, Wonder I love
you, Wonder Woman didn't make my list either.
Oh, did not make the list.
That. What's wrong with you guys?
Well, you can take it up with Nick after.
I will.
Yes. Next Film Club screening of The Philadelphia Story, Tuesday, February 6th. You got some time, but don't waste too much time and get your tickets for the next Film Club screening, AMC Rosemont 18. What's the website?
AMCtheaters.com. Unbelievable classic. Cary Grant, Jimmy Stewart, Katharine Hepburn. Those are pretty good actors.
Yeah, they did okay. That's Nick DiGilio, and we're coming back with headlines next. I want to welcome John Coyle in studio. John's a friend of the show and an Olympic silver medalist in the 5,000-meter relay in 94. What was that Olympics known for?
Breakthrough announcement in the Tanya Harding Jeff Dooley affair. Appears Tanya may have had a role or at least known about, and our head swivels and our eyes lock.
Please don't hurt me.
Babe, do you remember what it felt like being in the Lillehammer then?
I mean, it's just one of those things where she's coming one way, I'm coming the other way.
She hit you in the leg with a black pipe.
No, yeah. She's
back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Joe getting it done. Here's Joe getting it done. Highlights from yesterday's festivities. Might be an allergy. You feel weird at all?
Do you feel
I don't know, something
like loopy?
No, I think it's because there's radio management in the studio. I want to say hi to our guest, Ashley Byan. Ashley, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you guys?
Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you guys, too.
You're not like typical management. You're not here to fire me, are you?
No, okay. Not at all.
At least not yet.
Not yet.
I feel like you could fire me more so, even though
I don't think so.
No, Ashley, no.
I don't think so.
No.
You go to school where?
I go to Lewis University in Romeoville, Illinois.
And you run the radio station there?
Yeah, I'm the programming director over there, so it's pretty cool.
My natural enemy.
Yeah, but you forged a friendship here, so it's okay.
Well, I like Ashley.
Yeah.
Yeah. What kind of station is it?
It is a, 24-hour music station, but it's a college radio station, so we get to...
Play any crap you want?
Yeah, pretty much. That's it. Straight to the point.
What's the majority of the format? Is it hits? Is it...
No, we typically focus on alternative, but, underground alternative that nobody really knows about.
Kids, you crazy kids, you hippies.
Pretty much, yeah. But the newest thing that I implemented, which is just a radio dramas, like the old-time radio shows... I tried to
Dave,
do that once.
Old-time radio
that's
shows.
Cool.
I remember.
Yeah, old-time radio shows. Dave starred in a lot of those.
Really?
Ashley.
The Shadow Knows. Remember that, Dave? That was at the 30s when you were doing radio plays?
Oh, yeah, I see it. I can see it.
Thanks, Ashley.
No, I'm totally kidding.
What do you want to do? Do you know?
You know, just trying to figure it out as I go. I know life takes its course. You never know really where you're going to go. So I'm just kind of taking it day by day and see what fits me best.
That's super cool. Do you have news, too, and sports?
Yeah, we do everything there because it's just we're all learning, so we have to do what we got to do.
I love that. And how long are the shifts? I'm just curious.
3 hours.
Yeah, that's what it was back in our day.
Yep. Do you remember the first time you were on the radio in college?
I absolutely do. I was in Champaign at WPGU. I was a DJ at a classic rock
station. I was the pig, right? The old PGU, the pig?
No, the cow.
Oh, the cow.
Right, 25 years and 25 years, moo, and still rocking.
There you go.
But I got to give away, and I thought this was so cool. I got to take calls, and you know, Jimmy John's and Potbelly's are big submarine shops here. Blimpie's was big in Champaign, so I got
Didn't
to.
Jimmy John's start in Champaign?
They did. Yeah, Jimmy John actually went there.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I got to give away a free sub, and I thought that was so cool because people I knew were calling trying to win a sub sandwich. First air shift ever.
The first thing I did at Ithaca College in upstate New York was a review of the first Muppets movie.
No.
Yeah. It was 1980.
Yeah.
And it was 61 AM, 106 FM cable. FM cable was the way you got this station that nobody could hear into the dorms. So you could only hear it on campus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And we didn't have a lot to give away.
Uh-huh.
So we were giving away, obviously they're very valuable now, but we started giving away old textbooks.
Oh.
So it's old textbooks. And it was 106 caller.
Uh-huh.
You know, because I was
106.
Always. Yeah. And we didn't get any calls at all.
No.
Yeah, there was no one.
Start with caller one, maybe.
Now, is it mostly students, I assume, or does the signal get outside campus?
We have one outside group of older men that are in the community, and they do a trap rock show. On Saturdays.
Well, what is trop rock?
Tropical rock.
Beach
Jimmy
Boys?
Buffett. Yeah, Beach Boys kind of deal.
Neat.
Yeah, it's really fun. They're a fun group of dudes.
That's funny. Yeah. Now, do they have to answer to you?
No, not really. They don't really. They're really well behaved, so I don't really have to do much to them. They know what they're doing at this point.
Actually,
so like,
when you say they're older, what age group are we talking?
They're 60s.
Wow. Oh.
Yeah, they're 60s.
So they're nearly dead.
Oh, yeah. No way.
Yeah. They're older. I wasn't trying to.
Yeah. They're not old, but they're older.
No, older.
Older.
Right.
How old are your parents?
My parents are, my dad just turned 60 and my mom's, you know.
Younger.
Yeah.
Yeah, good girl. Good girl. Look at her. She knows.
You have a big family?
No, there's only four of us in the immediate family, so.
Brother, sister?
Brother.
And older, younger?
Older.
What's he do?
He is also a marketing major, because I do marketing as well. And he also did broadcasting, but he doesn't focus on that. He focuses more on the marketing side.
Well, you're very poised. You know, this is a big shot radio station. You seem very calm about the whole thing.
I know. I was freaking out before, and then once the mic came on, I was like, whoo.
Yeah.
You know, it's I'm going back and forth, because I could see you on the air. You have a great personality, but I can also see you in management. I love the fact that young female manager, program director, that is just, that's fantastic.
Thank you.
Texter from the 708, Lewis Radio is awesome. They kill it.
Yeah. Oh, thank you.
That might be one of the old guys. probably not. He wouldn't know how to text.
He's groovy.
Yeah. Well, listen, stick around and evaluate us, will you?
I will.
And give us a report on what you think.
I got it. I'm on it.
Awesome. Oh, like an air check.
I'm nervous with
Remember,
management
we,
in the room.
She can do an air check on us.
I don't see that happening. Eric Hadlestown will join us next hour. My friend Pat Brady's here. How are you?
Morning. How you doing?
You classed up the joint when you brought your lovely daughter, Kelly, in this morning.
Yes, very proud of Kelly. She's a good kid. She's San Diego State, trying to maybe transfer into UCLA, be a film major. So a lot of exciting stuff for Kelly.
We're going to make some calls. Oh, no, she should probably do that on her own.
That's...
Here's the deal. We'll get into the assorted politics of Governor Rauner and Pritzker and everything else. But yesterday, the president took another position on immigration. Let's get rid of the politics for a second. Just forget about the politics. I think we can all agree we need immigration reform, right?
Right.
I don't care if you're Democrat, Republican, it's a broken system. It needs to be fixed. The question is, do you really need a wall? So here is what has been asked for. $18 billion for the, quote, physical wall, and $14 billion in cash and prizes for technology and other things. So I'm not just a pretty face. I did some math here. And the $32 billion that's being requested, which includes the $18 billion, is over a 10-year period. Congress wants the DACA deal to be part of it on the Democrat side. On the Republican side, they're saying, I should say the Republicans want the DACA deal to be part of it in a package deal. The Democrats just want a clean DACA deal, no immigration wall. My opinion is you don't need a wall. And my opinion, you don't need a wall, is because we've got ex-agents, obviously the agents union, the border guards union, and others, and most importantly, the people that live there. You're saying, no, we don't need a wall. We need people. Now, Trump on the trail said he would hire 5,000 new agents. That has not been done yet. So there is a 700 to 900 mile stretch where this wall would go. Not the 2,000 mile distance. 700 to 900 miles. There's about 16 or 17,000 agents now. They need more. So if we take that $18 billion that's set aside, and you look at the average salary for a border agent, which is $100,000. It's $70,000 plus 30 in benefits. It's 100 grand is what it costs taxpayers. And you run the numbers. You could get 15,000 new agents covering 900 miles, 24/7 and 3 8-hour shifts a day. And over the 10 years, it would cost you $1.5 billion a year. $15 billion total over 10 years. And you'd still have $3 billion to pay to play with. Here's the cool part. You would have an agent every 300 yards for all 900 miles.
I think that's a great solution. What would their uniform be?
Well, yeah, no, I don't know.
That's the question. I thought you were going to
I was thinking Andy Frank, kind of like the Cub game.
Oh, yeah, yeah. But isn't that a good idea? Look at all the jobs you'd create.
No, especially for Republicans. You know, we could be like Democrats and get into patronage. We could hand out jobs for everybody's kids.
Well, that's the reason I'm surprised nobody's, you know, talking about this, because you could run these numbers and you can go trip over each other and taking credit for it.
Sure.
First.
And even in that, the technology, there's technology now you could put in there that could replace a lot of bodies. It probably would be even less expensive, but the idea of putting up a wall on our southern border, so when you come into the country you see the Statue of Liberty, when you're on the bottom of the country you see the wall. I think a lot of people don't think that's a good idea.
300 yards is here across Michigan Avenue, line of sight 300 yards. You can see 300 yards. So if you're 300 yards away from me, you can tell me if somebody's coming. I can tell you if somebody's coming. I could shout and you could hear me.
Sure.
So it's covered. And it's a stark example because, frankly, you don't need 15,000 agents. You don't need an agent every 300 yards. But the point is, you're throwing money away by putting $18 billion into a physical wall. It's nothing more than a campaign promise.
Particularly since the economies have picked up that there aren't as many people trying to get into the
40%.
States.
Yeah, you know what? And the president gets too much credit, gets too much blame. Trump is in office while the numbers have dropped 40%. And as much as you and I don't like him, he deserves credit for the fact that the numbers are down 40%. There are more people leaving the country going back to Mexico than there are coming in.
Exactly. And President Obama deported a lot of people. The problem's not the people coming in. It's the 15, 16 million people that are here now illegally, and we don't have 16 million pair of handcuffs. So we got to figure out what to do with them. A lot of them, children. Of these folks that need to be taken care of. So it's a big problem. There are easy solutions, but we have to get the willpower on both sides to do it. It's interesting, as the president spoke about what he wanted to do, and Kevin McCarthy, the Democrat,
stepped up and said, whoa.
But yeah. There's room for compromise, but the far right and the far left need to give it up, and we need to get something in the middle, and I think it's doable.
Well, that's the thing that's maddening as well, is the Democrats are so wrapped up in winning their political side that they don't take a step back either. I don't understand how no one else is thinking about the fact that the human component here is a big deal, and we need more agents because the agents down there say we need more agents.
Same thing here. We need more police. I mean, that's what the
right.
Mayor's talking about. The more bodies you have, the more effective you're going to be. And like you just illustrated there, it's more cost effective, let alone the idiocy of putting a big wall. What kind of symbol that sets?
Make it a job fair. 15,000 new jobs, and you get more protection than you would for the wall, plus you're saving $3 billion.
Well, we had talked about this, Eric and I, via text a couple days ago, and he wants to get his daughter down there on the wall.
On the wall.
On the border.
Because she's really scary at home.
No, so she needs a job.
On the border. Oh.
Well, we could put her right on the Rio Grande. It'd be pretty easy work. You just stand outside
extreme.
The river.
Well, those agents, if you're a fan of documentaries, there's a couple of great ones that are out about the border agents. It's a tough job. It's a tough job. It's a dangerous job. But like the Secret Service, you spend the majority of the time standing around. And then when the S hits the fan, you're doing a lot of stuff that you never really would want to encounter in your regular life. And these folks are trained to do it. But the other part of it, you mentioned the kids. These folks have to be babysitters. And they have to care about these kids. You know, most of them are parents themselves, right? So you see these little kids who are escaping El Salvador and various other places where their lives are in danger every day, and there's sex trafficking of children.
Sex trafficking is a big deal. I lived in San Diego and in Arizona for a while, and there's some horrific stories that really never hit the press about bringing these people in
right.
these boxes and leaving them in the desert to die.
Right.
There's all kinds of terrible stories. We went horseback riding. Kelly was on this trip a couple years ago. And if you get even close to the border, you can see like old tennis shoes and campfire sites. And it's terrible. It's a terrible thing.
So the border agents are heroes. So let's give them more to work with. That's the point, as opposed to a bunch of concrete and fencing, which isn't going to get it done.
And jobs for all the Republicans.
That's it. I'm telling you, Republicans, Democrats, or anybody else, jump in. More on politics coming up. First, sponsored by Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. When the Hawks don't have a great night, we don't spend a lot of time going over it.
The Minnesota Wild come into Chicago and pick up a big win. They hold on and beat the Hawks here tonight 2-1.
That's everything you need to know about last night's game.
It's a long one.
Yeah, relatively speaking. Steve of the News next.
This is the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
Havana, Unana. Hey. Half of my heart is in Havana. He took me back to East Atlanta,
This is Joe Romano.
Oh, my heart is in Havana.
He covered this. I don't know if you know this.
Sounds so good.
Havana, no.
It is 7:13, Steve Cochran. Show number 1,065. 1,065 consecutive days where Mike Madigan didn't show up on the show. Let's not even wait for the crickets. Seventh caller now wins anything Sandberg wants to give you off the prize list in honor of Madigan not having the courage to show up on the show again. And let me re-welcome Pat Brady to the program. Pat, your company's name is what?
Next Generation Strategies. Thank you.
And Eric Edelstein, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
And your company?
AL Media.
Yesterday, as you both know, some news was made when Governor Rauner put out a commercial tying J.B. Pritzker to Governor Blagojevich, and then Pritzker immediately put out two commercials in response, your thoughts on both, Pat?
I think it's a good commercial by Governor Rauner because I think he's making the point, which we all understand, that J.B. Pritzker is Madigan's candidate. He's a mayor's candidate. He's a buddy of Blagojevich. It's just going to be the same old if we elect him. And he's not really talking about any big policy changes other than a big tax increase. He's not talking about any reforms. That we put J.B. Pritzker back in the governor's mansion. It's just like putting Rod Blagojevich or any of the people that are controlled by Madigan back in the governor's mansion. So I think the message is effective, and I think it's effective because it's true.
I mean, there's an interesting chess game going on. Obviously, you now have the Republican governor mucking around in the Democratic primary, and there's obviously multiple candidates. And people know I'm working for one of them, Chris Kennedy. There's obviously other candidates as well. When you start to play in the other candidates' primaries, you can have a ricochet effect, and you don't know what happens. Some people think, oh, he's just trying to slow down Pritzker. Some people are saying he really doesn't want to go up against Pritzker's money. Regardless, I think it's going to be fascinating to see how this plays. It's, you know, Pritzker's basically had the airwaves to himself since last May in the Democratic primary. He's taken very little fire, and you know, these FBI tapes, we talked about them on here. They're pretty damning, and not to suggest that he committed any crimes. There was never any allegation of that, but I think it just the optics of it, and when you hear his voice talking to a governor that everyone knew was basically corrupt. And
yeah, this is 3 weeks. 3 weeks before Rod was arrested.
You know, and he's basically asking him to consider him to appoint him to a job. And, you know, it just, I think what bothers people about it is the sense of entitlement. You have money, you're an insider, you can pick up the phone and call the governor. The sort of arrogance of thinking, well, even if the guy's corrupt, maybe I can get something out of him at this point. I think that's what the culture in Illinois has really reacted against.
Unethical. It's just ethics, yeah. You know, it really just, play a part of it.
It just doesn't smell good.
Yeah. So that's the overhanging question here. What changes? If J.B. Pritzker is the next governor of the state of Illinois, and if you would agree, and I don't know how you couldn't agree, the state has mammoth problems now. What changes if Mike Madigan's chosen gubernatorial candidate is the next governor?
We get a tax increase.
Well, that'll be fun.
It's guaranteed.
Again,
we'll get the same stuff, basically the same things we've gotten from Madigan, controlled by the public sector unions. We won't get any true reform. And Eric's candidate, Chris Kennedy, Dan Biss, they're all talking reforms of this property tax system that's so corrupt. But if you like JB, it's just more of the same. And that Eric just pointed it out. It's that entitlement. I'm an insider. It's my turn. They've greased the skids for JB Madigan and the Democrat leadership. And they did the same thing with Hillary Clinton, and look what it got them.
Well, you know, that has been a bit of my complaint. And I don't, you know, this isn't about particular individuals. I think, you know, Kennedy's talking about systemic change that has to happen beyond any particular politician. It's just we have to go a lot further than just replacing someone. Property tax system, how we fund schools, how we create economic development and jobs. But
the funny thing, I'm sorry to interrupt, but the funny thing about, or ironic thing about the property tax system is the one guy that the state now knows completely greases skids so he could get a tax break on his second Astor Street mansion is the nominee of the Democratic Party. You couldn't get more insider, more corrupt, and that kind of action makes people sick to their stomach. Mm-hmm. Somebody else paid that $250,000. That's a set pool. So some poor family or some family that doesn't live on Astor Street paid that money in a system that he's the only candidate on the Democrat side that's not talking about reforming. Excuse me, Eric. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah, I don't remember what I was going to say. No.
Yeah, that's why I did it. I knew you were going to blast Rauner, so I interrupted you.
Yeah, right. That was good. But look, Illinois, there's a broader issue here, which goes beyond any particular politicians, which is that Illinois has unbelievable assets, but there's a lot of decline. We have out-migration population. We lead in all the markers you don't want to lead.
Yep.
And something's got to change regardless of party. And I think that, you know, this is a new development in this race. I said it all along. You know, we talk about this, Steve. Funny thing happens when the voters get involved in these elections. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we're still 9 or 10 weeks away from this primary.
Well, if you get away, too, from Pritzker's money that he's putting in his own. Both the candidates, your candidate, Chris Kennedy and Dan Biss, have raised numbers that would have been sufficient numbers in any other year that there wouldn't be this big disparity, and they would be. Right. JB wouldn't have been on TV since 4 years ago.
Right. Well, that's a perfect segue into what I want to ask you both next. And we need to just have a fair explanation on why it's so important to vote in the primary, and not from our perspective, because we pay attention to this stuff all the time. But the idea that you're just going to vote for the guy that you see on TV because he's the guy that you see on TV means nothing's going to change. And by the way, Mr. Pritzker, like Mr. Madigan, are welcome to come in here anytime. Okay. Anytime. We'll make room. Guess what we have to give away? How about free Hawks tickets?
Yes.
Huh? How about that, Dave? Right. How about that? How about that? Dave. Is your mic not on?
Yeah,
that's
no,
my
it's
fault.
Not.
Now it is. A pair of tickets to see the Blackhawks and the New York Islanders on Saturday, January 20th. You're entered also if you win for four season tickets for next year. The four seasons, folks, don't get enough credit for this. That's a big deal.
Big time.
You know, one of these winners of tickets, a row show or my show all year long, we're going to pull a name, and they're going to get four season tickets, and they've
huge.
Done it for 3 or 4 years, right?
Yeah, it's great. Yeah. It's great. And by the way, that game, their first after the week off. So
is that right?
Everybody will be very hungry for hockey that night.
Fresh.
Yep.
Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingandcooling.com. We have a future Hollywood mogul in our midst who is going to be doing a guest reading of the riddle today, and these riddles are all written by the musical director of the program, John DeCoss. If you will, please welcome to the show with our standard sitting ovation, Kelly Brady.
Yes.
Woo. Do we have our special music for this? All right, hit it. Good morning, Kelly. How are you?
Good. How are you?
It's nice to see you. Now, you do not know, you've never met, or you're not related to anyone in studio. Is that accurate?
Yes, that is accurate.
All right, fine. Kelly.
Wait a minute. Full disclosure.
Kelly is about
no,
to...
No, her mother just told me I was her father. I never verified.
Yeah. Right.
They still don't know.
Kelly's going to read the riddle here. You know, I make fun of the fact that we do these riddles, Kelly. You are how old?
19.
And you go to college where?
San Diego State University.
You and your friends at 19, 20, 21, probably not doing a lot of riddles, probably not talking riddles all that much.
You know, here and there.
Oh, really?
Here and there.
Wow. Looks like I'm wrong about this. All right.
Kidding.
So you're going to read the riddle. Don't give up the answer. And then the first person who can give us the correct answer of who this famous Chicagoan is will win those tickets and qualify for season tickets from our friends at Four Seasons. Whenever you're ready, fire away.
Born on an island in the Pacific West, arrived in Chicago for his political quest. Harvard and the Senate, after teaching at UC, the first of his kind of the first 43.
But she even got the rhythm.
Oh, that's good.
That was a good read.
Really strong. Musical. She read it so well.
Read. Yeah, I felt like I nailed that. Yeah. All right, one more time.
Born on an island in the Pacific West, arrived in Chicago for his political quest. Harvard and the Senate, after teaching at UC, the first of his kind of the first 43.
Is it Joe Arpaio? Sheriff Joe Arpaio?
I'm thinking no.
Our Senate candidate.
No.
Oh, yeah. Is I'm sorry?
Not Lincoln?
Is it Lincoln? Is it Abraham Lincoln? First correct answer now, 312-981-7200. Thank you, Kelly.
Thank you.
All right, so here's what we hear constantly from people, and people aren't wrong. How do we get the same idiots running for every election? And the reason you get the same idiots is because not enough people vote in the primary. So let me bring Eric and Pat back here. What's the average turnout for a primary?
Well, there's a lot of ways it's calculated, but it is a fraction of the eligible voting population. Typically, of the people who are registered to vote, you'll get probably 20%, 25% in a non-presidential year. This year might be a little bit different, but it's fractional of who's eligible to vote.
And of those people, Pat, those are the far right and far left that show up?
Typically, the most activists, which are typically the fringes of the far right or far left of either party.
So am I overstating this if I say if you don't vote in the primary, you get the same idiots that you always complain about?
Yeah, I'd like to see an open primary, actually.
How do you change that? Is that a constitutional change or is that just a law change?
You don't have to grab a ballot. You can just go down and vote Democrat or Republican.
Right, but I'm saying how do you change it from the open primary law now?
That's a statutory change. It's been thrown about for a while. I think that'd be a good way to change it.
There's also other things that can be done to make it easier to vote. You know, we transfer trillions of dollars electronically around the world safely all the time. We do all kinds of, we get college degrees online, and yet we make people take time off of work, go stand in line on one day every 2 years to go cast a vote. You know, we sort of restrict the ability to the ballot box. States that have much more robust mail-in ballots have much higher participation rates, and I think that's healthy.
I'm still amazed at that, though, too, that it's not all electronic, or I know there's room for error in everything. I mean, you put your credit card information online and
whatnot. That's the thing. People always talk about we can't risk the fact that some votes would be fraudulent. We risk the entire financial balance of the world.
I would rather risk that than taking the giant ballot that I still have to do, and you take a pen and you connect the arrow, the left side of it to the right side with the arrow.
There's no,
and it takes, and you know what? It takes twice as long.
You know what? There's no risk. Dumb. I mean, look, Trump just disbanded this fraud commission because there is no systemic fraud in these elections. There's some errors that occur, but there's no intentional fraud that goes on a mass
scale. I would argue that through a properly vetted digital system, you would probably have less than you have now, even these fraction of 1% that you go out and you find, well, somebody knew somebody and they got to vote twice. Digitally, you could stop that.
You know, that I think creates an opportunity for both parties to get new voters.
Right.
And to me, that's what, if you want to get more increased participation in the primary, you have to attract new people that actually care about the issues. Right now, it's so marginalized on the fringes of the political spectrum, it just doesn't attract more people to vote.
Now, having said that, when you look at the turnouts, the elections that have happened, the special elections, the elections in New Jersey and Virginia, there have been double the turnout in some places. I mean, in the Virginia primary, you had double the number of Democrats came out as 4 years before. So
in Alabama, the Roy Moore thing.
Alabama, lots more people came out. So I don't know that that's sustainable without, you know, systemic reform. But in this moment of Trump and people feeling like I can't sit on the sidelines while watching this happen to my country, people are getting up and participating, and that's a healthy thing.
There's going to be a Supreme Court decision this term on gerrymandering too, which
in Wisconsin,
it's a Wisconsin case, but a judge ruled on I think it's in North Carolina throughout the congressional map, meaning that they're finally going to start looking at the constitutionality of some of these maps, and it'll be less gerrymandered, meaning it'll be less partisan districts. You'll get more participation because as a moderate Republican in certain parts of this state, you can't run in the primary because there's not a chance. You get low turnout and you only get party activists turned up. They're the very far right of the party. I think it's the same for the Democrats, too.
And that brings it full circle. And I had this discussion with a big shot who will remain nameless in politics, that there is no state in the country that still has a Mike Madigan. The party boss, whether they're Republican or Democrat, they don't exist anymore. Reiner's made plenty of mistakes. And whether he owns them or not, it remains to be seen, and whether he pays the price in this election or not remains to be seen. But the fact is, until we have a governor who can find a way to work around and over and through Mike Madigan, or Mike Madigan goes away, nothing in the state will change. And the state has dramatic problems that have led to this point, and the one constant that we have is Mike Madigan.
It's true, but I will push back and say there have been governors that have been able to work with him and any other leadership on the Democratic side who've always passed budgets, who haven't created fiscal crises until we had Rauner. So, you know, to put it all at the feet of one person, I think, is not fair. I think that the systemic change that has to happen goes well beyond any one individual, whether it's the speaker or this governor. But the fact is, the governor is in charge and the state's in decline, and we got to do something about that.
The thing is, though, just the process of how Springfield works, where I spend the sessions, nothing gets done unless Mike Madigan wants it to get done. Nothing goes through committee. If he doesn't like the committee, he changes the committees. If he doesn't like, he determines what gets called and what gets done. The thing is, and give him credit for accumulating this much power, he has outsized influence for the role. So it makes it very difficult, much more difficult than it was for Governor Thompson or Governor Edgar to get things done. He's much more powerful now, and he's much more partisan now, much less willing to work with the governor. When his floor leaders say, we're not going to give him anything, it's a problem. I'm not saying that that's an excuse, but there's got to be a way around it. I think there's a lot of young, new elected officials on both sides of the aisle that are sick of it too and like to get something done.
Well, that's
maybe,
why
maybe they come together.
That's why I'd reach out to Democrats. And obviously, this is a Democrat state. I'd reach out to Democrats and say, aren't you tired of it? Don't you want fresh Democrat blood in? And that's why you need to vote in the primaries for Democrats that you like to have an opportunity to change Springfield.
And even in his district, which he has locked down, I don't think he represents the membership anymore of his district, meaning the makeup of his district is not what it was when he was first elected 48 years ago. It's completely changed. That being said, he's got it all locked down because of the political mechanics of it. But I do think there's an opportunity there to reach across to people that are new and young and have a different idea of the way things should operate.
And Madigan and Pritzker, did I mention this? Both invited on the program anytime mm-hmm. they want to come in. We're going to get some national stuff coming up. Russell's in Northbrook. All right, Russell. Kelly, you got the riddle still?
Sure.
Kelly, give me the riddle one more time, if you would, please, before Russell gives us his answer.
All righty.
Kelly doing a dramatic pause now before she presents the riddle.
Here we go.
All right, here we go.
Born on an island in the Pacific West, arrived in Chicago for his political quest. Harvard and the Senate after teaching at UC, the first of his kind of the first 43.
Russell, who is it?
President Barack Obama.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Oh, very nice. Was it the way Kelly read it, I bet?
Yeah.
I think I helped him out.
I think you did.
It's not Lincoln?
Yep.
Not
congratulations,
Lincoln.
Russell. You and Kelly are going to enjoy the game. And Pat just had a heart attack.
and so did my wife.
All right, hold on, man. We appreciate
That's
it.
Awesome.
And again, thank you again to Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and all the other fine stuff they do.
Everything that I've done is 100% proper. That's what I do, is I do things proper. And, you know, I guess the collusion now is dead, because everyone found that after a year of study, there's been absolutely no collusion. There has been no collusion between us and the Russians. Now, there has been collusion between Hillary Clinton, the DNC, and the Russians. Unfortunately, you people don't cover that very much, but the only collusion is between Hillary and the Russians and the DNC and the Russians.
This is the Steve Cochran Show, live from the Allstate Showcase Studio on Chicago's very own
720 WGN.
The whole thing just makes you tired. And the problem with being tired is we can't give up on it. You can't give up on it because it's just too important.
Ugh.
It's just too important to let go. Pat Brady and Eric Edelsteiner here. Now we'll talk about President Donald J. Trump and the fact that the only person that continues to bring up Hillary Clinton is President Donald J. Trump. Yes, Eric.
He's still president?
Yes, yes, he is. I know you nodded off for a second,
wow.
But yes, he is still in the White House. He is going to have to talk to Robert Mueller at some point. So, former prosecutor Brady, does the president of the United States have the ability to say, no, I'm not going to do it?
I'm not sure if the president does, but as a citizen, you can invoke your Fifth Amendment right to protect
self-incrimination.
Self-incrimination, which is bad politics, and presidents historically have, as you mentioned earlier, George Bush did. Bill Clinton actually did in the Paula Jones case, and a former associate of mine was one of the guys that actually did the questioning. And he admitted, he goes, and this is a sign of a truly good attorney, one he'll admit, I did not do a very good job, because Bill Clinton was one of the smartest, most evasive witnesses I've ever had. In fact, that was the one where he came up with the, it depends on what the definition of is.
Well, this is the question, right? Because if you've had a lifetime of lying, you've had a lifetime of lying. So you go into something like that prepared to lie. But even if he's not under oath, isn't lying to
federal agents
a federal agent a crime?
Yeah, it's a felony. That's where most of the time these guys get tripped up. But just watching Donald Trump and listening to that last clip, I can't imagine any defense attorney that thinks there's any kind of exposure whatsoever is going to allow him to speak to Bob Mueller and his prosecution.
Well, then let me ask both of you. So wouldn't it be less damaging, because we know there's 30% of the country that is always going to support him and always believe it's a conspiracy out to get him and therefore them? Isn't it safer for him to declare his Fifth Amendment privileges and not answer a question and take the political heat and claim it's one big fix than it is for him to even open his mouth and talk?
Well, by implication, you're saying you're invoking the Fifth because you have something to hide.
I know that. But
so
I'm
that's
saying
politically is terrible. But yeah, I mean, he didn't turn over his tax returns. Never been done. And we still remember the one-page physical we got? I mean, there's
right.
He can get away with it, the 33%.
But here's this is going to be the fascinating psychological thing playing out. Here's a guy
who believes he can talk his way out of anything.
Yep.
Right? Who has and knows that he's lying and has written books and has said sometimes you got to lie.
Yep.
Maybe he said all the time you have to lie. And so I cannot imagine that when his presidency and his ultimate reputation are on the line, lawyers, Pat's absolutely right, would be completely irresponsible, committing malpractice to not body slam him from testifying or giving testimony to these officials.
Secret Service stops him from walking into the room.
Right, body slam him. But psychologically, this guy, the way he's built, I think he thinks he could walk in there and talk his way out of it.
I did white collar when I was a federal prosecutor. It was public corruption and white collar cases, and there's never a white collar guy that doesn't think he can't talk his way out of it. And the only thing they'll ever admit to is a tax offense. That's like a badge of honor. Of course I cheated the IRS, but they won't admit to anything else. But I agree completely. He wants to do it, but it would be disastrous. But if they do it, I hope it's pay-per-view, prime time, and we all get to watch.
And the pay-per-view all goes to a reasonable charity or the debt, which I don't know. That is the overriding important story that's out there in regards to the future.
Just an add-on to that, over the holidays, there were some developments in this investigation in that they've almost completed the circle on the obstruction case, I think, and there's some pretty damning evidence about contemporaneous statements that the president and others made during the time when he fired the FBI director, which goes back to the potential obstruction charges.
Would that be considered perjury? I mean, because the lie, you just mentioned the lies. I mean, something has to be done, just the lying, the constant lying. I mean,
if you lie to a federal agent, it's a crime.
But could it go all the way to the presidency? I mean, could he be charged with perjury?
Well, there's an open question whether or not the president can actually be indicted as a sitting president. It's a separation of powers argument. It was briefed and argued, at least briefed in the Nixon case, but they've never really ruled on it. So it's an open question whether he can actually be indicted, which makes me lead to believe at the end of this, Mueller's going to indict whomever he's going to indict, and then he's going to issue a report to the House that's going to take up the issue of whether or not this impeachable offense.
Okay, so who ultimately determines if the president can be indicted? Is it a constitutional question that goes to the Supreme Court?
Well, the prosecutors will sit down, the Justice Department will make the calculation. Do they think that they have a legal grounds to indict him, whether it's tenable to do it, whether it's actually legal? Now, that may end up, can't imagine that's not going to end up going to the United States Supreme Court. Then you got to make the calculation. Do you really want to drag the country through 2 years of debate on this when we could focus on other things, which to me makes more sense that Mueller's just going to go, we're just going to make our recommendation, issue our report back to the House.
Pat, are we too early to start to see an end game here, do you think?
It's going to go through at least 18. And these cases, these white-collar cases like this, where remember, Andrew Weissman, the guy he brought in, was the Enron prosecutor, is a money laundering expert. Money laundering requires bank records. Bank records take a long time to get, particularly when you might be dealing with overseas banks. So I don't see this thing ending this year.
And the damage that could be done over the course of the next several months is really hard to calculate. Breaking news, especially for our Southern Illinois listeners, if you're waking up to the you are waking up to this morning. The governor of Missouri has admitted to an extramarital affair. He denies threatening to blackmail his former mistress, all this being reported by CBS affiliate KMOV, that's a television station in St. Louis. She says she has an audio recording that backs up her story, the former mistress, that the governor, prior to when he was governor in 2015, taped her hands to a piece of exercise equipment in the basement of his former home in St. Louis, blindfolded her, and took a nude photo in order to be able to blackmail her.
Mm-hmm. That's nice.
She said the now governor later apologized and told her he had deleted the photo. Her ex-husband, because she would get divorced as well, her ex-husband tipped off the TV station all of this.
Unbelievable.
So the governor is admitting an affair, not admitting the blackmail, but it gets worse from there. The governor's current wife, his second wife, they were married in 2011. They have a couple of little kids. Says this is between his family and God, and we have a loving marriage, and anything else is nobody's business. Unfortunately, when you're the governor, it is. That will come out. So that's an ugly story today. Let's get some good news in here. What are you doing with the Lincoln Forum?
January 22nd, we have Governor Reiner coming. Chicago Athletic Association, LincolnForum.org. Have a good discussion with the governor. He doesn't do a lot of these, so I think it's a unique opportunity to in an intimate setting to hear what the governor has to say. So it's going real well. And then I think in February, we're going to kick off on the 15th. We're going to have Jason Grotto and John Cass talk about their coverage of the property tax issue here,
which is a big deal leading right up to the primary. Yeah. The governor and Senator Durbin, in a nice little bipartisan situation, seem to have gotten together on the problem with the veterans home in Quincy.
Yeah, give Senator Durbin a lot of credit for going down there, looking at the situation, making a calculation that, yeah, we can fix this. The governor's doing the right thing. He's a Democrat and can be very partisan, and mm-hmm. I mean that in a not disparaging way, and went down there and said, you know what, this is a priority. He's taking care of it. We need to keep this facility here and get it fixed and take care of our veterans. So it was one of those moments where you're like, wow, it really works when people work together.
By the way, did you see the leadership meeting at the White House? Durbin was sitting right next to Trump.
Have you talked to him since?
No, I've not.
That was a hostage video.
I would have been a good caption contest. He was like, what's Dick Durbin thinking?
Get me out of here.
The most telling moment of that video, and this, of course, comes after Fire and Fury, when the president and president's team wanted to show that he is actually in charge of what's between his ears and he could run a meeting. Which is why the cameras were in there for 55 minutes as opposed to the two they normally get in a situation like that. But the most telling moment was when Dianne Feinstein said, Mr. President, this is what we're looking for. She was talking about a clean immigration situation where DACA would be taken care of separate from a wall. Trump agreed to it. And then Kevin McCarthy did what, Pat?
Oh, the House Majority Leader, which is sitting to the president's left. I thought the vein in his neck was going to blow up.
Whoa.
You know what he meant to say, Senator, was this. And it... Listen, I bang on Trump all the time, and he deserves it, but I watched the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
This guy does not have a clue on policy, at least on Republican or Democrat, what the issues are on either side. Not a clue.
Well, he literally said, my position is whatever the people in the room here say. He said that out loud.
I'll sign whatever.
Yeah.
That's not a good position if you're the president of the United States and you're control of one-third of the government.
And you're head of the Republican Party, which is supposed to have certain things that they right. believe in. And if he wants to reach across the aisle with Democrats, I think he blew an opportunity not doing it early. And that's when he gets his best press, when he does that, like he did with the Budget Act. But
the problem is he'll change his mind 10 minutes later.
He did. So, he walked out.
Yeah. So
Texters chiming in on the question about registering to vote and voting in the primary. One of the things that constantly comes up in Illinois is, let's get the judges off the ballot. Is that ever going to happen?
I don't think so. It's hard to put the toothpaste back in the tube. And even if it's good government, you know, you end up in a situation where who ends up picking the judges? And then, you know, it's hard to disenfranchise people, even as goofy as the system is, and people don't know who the judges are they're voting for. It's hard to take away the right to vote on something.
All this transparency, too, that's a great question. I think now people will look into what the assessor does, what the controller once did with the water reclamation district. You know, these jobs that now they're coming under fire for various reasons.
Well, remember, in the judicial races, I worked on a campaign in the 90s, one of the first women to run with a female Irish name. She had no party support, no money.
Won.
And she won by landslide. So people were actually changing their names to make them sound Irish.
Right. Or putting their middle name and maiden name in or hyphenating. Yeah.
So like it'd be Mick Feldstein instead of Feldstein, that kind of a move?
Exactly. Or like Steve McCochran. No, Steve, you know, McCarthy Cochran.
I could run as Pat Brady, and they wouldn't know if I was a man or a woman. I guarantee I'd win.
That was Obama's joke always, that he put an apostrophe between the O and the B.
Hey, it's Obama.
Obama.
But you look at the ballot, and you see those judicial races. I don't care how informed you are, it's pretty tough to get down.
I would argue that there is a way to know, and you go by the Bar Association's recommendations, which is a website that's two clicks away.
Right.
And prior to the primary, the Bar Association says whether or not they recommend the people for the position.
And you can bring those recommendations into the voting booth.
Yeah, you can bring all the paperwork you want.
So many people do not know that. They don't think you can bring anything in except your ID. And I'm like, no, bring a folder if you want.
That's speaking of that, last question for both of you. When we tell people that, listen, here's a good website or here's a good place to go to learn about these candidates that are running for the primary, votesmart.org is a good public policy thing. You put in your zip code, they'll tell you who's running. You guys like any others?
I mean, most of the newspapers, wherever you live, whether it's Trib or Sun-Times or your local papers, do a pretty good job of profiling candidates for the major offices these days. And so, you know, you can look around lots of different places. If you want sort of a broader sense of what's going on in the political landscape, too, Real Clear Politics is a great site that has lots of stuff.
I think if you really want to go to the place with the people with the right ideas and the people that should be elected, just go to the Republican candidates.
There you go.
Wow.
That's from Pat McKenna.
We were having a kumbaya
moment.
Yeah. That was from Pat McBrady.
Let's go back to the voting app.
No, I agree with you. There's plenty of information on the internet.
We'll continue to try to point it out to you as we go on with our push for you to register. What did we decide we'd call it?
We're going to call. Do you want to say it now?
Yeah, say it out loud.
Make America Vote Again.
That's right, MAVA. We're putting the hats together for Make America Vote Again.
Yeah.
It sounds kind of threatening.
You will vote.
You're going to make America vote again.
With the fist shaking.
Nice to see you guys. Thank you.
Thanks. See you.
It's 8:02. We'll come back with your news next. And then, Dean, wrap up the politics thing here just a second. I'd just like to take you behind the curtain here for a little part of our world every morning and how partisan things are and how some of you listeners, not many, but some of you listeners only hear what you want to hear. Here's a text I got at 7:05. You have to build a wall because you need a permanent solution. Democrats want more agents so the next time they win the presidency, they can let them go. We know you don't care if illegal immigrants kill Americans as long as they vote Democratic. Keep only telling one side of the story and try and increase the hatred in this country. Okay, so that's somebody that thinks I'm a diehard Democrat, right? 30 minutes later, I want to make sure I get the time right here. Stand by 1 second. I know I've got it. I've got it. Here we go.
There it is, yeah.
30 minutes later at 7:40. Trump won because of the new laws that Wisconsin and other states set up, making it harder to vote. Thousands of voters were turned away in Wisconsin and other states of the same laws because of ID issues. Addresses didn't match and so on. You like that law because it helps the GOP win elections.
Ah.
And that's one of the cleaner ones. My point is, listen to the whole argument.
Yeah.
You don't have to live in the middle where I try to spend most of my time mm-hmm. because there are things that are Republican sided that I absolutely believe in, and there are things that are Democrat sided that I absolutely believe in. But if you live only in your world, nothing's going
to
change.
You know what your problem is? You're too far to the left and you're too far to the right.
Yeah, it's surprising I could stand up.
I know. Right? I know.
at 8:16, let's do this.
Grammy Hall of Fame announced 3 new inductees. I couldn't be more delighted.
Whoop-de-doo!
Neil Diamond is going to be inducted this year.
Cracklin' Rose, get on board.
We all have one mystical thing in common, our love for Neil.
The group Queen.
I think we'll go with a little Bohemian Rhapsody, gentlemen.
Good call.
Easy come, easy go.
Will you let me go?
Scaramouche, Scaramouche.
Will you do the fandango? Thunderbolt and lightning, very, very frightening me.
Let's try to do any song but that. What's the third one?
Tina Turner.
Back to the Steve Cochran Show on 720 WGN.
She did it all in heels. Dean joins us from Channel 9. That's our Joe Romano getting it done, huh?
Yeah.
How about that introduction to you?
Very nice. Very, very nice. Making the segment sound way more entertaining than it is.
Boy, let's not let that secret out.
When Oprah becomes president, I don't know if you've heard this. This just came out.
I wish people would talk about it.
When Oprah becomes president, Tina Turner will be named Secretary of Legs. It's going to be a whole new department in the executive department.
Well, you saw her in concert. We've all seen her in concert. Oh. Back in the day, she would dance her fanny off in 4, 5, or 6-inch heels.
Yeah.
Pretty impressive.
One time, I don't remember where, it doesn't matter, but she's dancing like crazy on stage in those heels, and then at a point, this part of the stage lifts out of the stage and extends over the audience, like a bridge sort of.
Got it.
Over the audience. Couldn't have been more than like 4 feet wide. And she's dancing up and down this very narrow.
Without falling into the crowd?
Above the crowd and dancing.
It's like a movable catwalk. It was like a catwalk. You're right, Dean, that extended out over.
Yeah. Coming up, Harvey Weinstein gets slapped. And it's not with a lawsuit. What's James Franco hiding, or isn't he? Corey Feldman back in the news. Jack Black in the news. Game of Thrones in the news. And Dean's got a honey of a deal to tell you about as well. Oh, we'll get Ricky Martin in here, too. But I don't know that you've had a chance to talk about Milt Rosenberg yet, so I want to give you a chance to do that.
The sad story that we've been reporting that came out yesterday of the death of longtime Extension 720 host Milt Rosenberg. He hosted the two-hour talk fest on WGN Radio from 1973 until 2012.
Right.
How many radio hosts have a run like that?
None.
Just does not happen.
Right.
Died of pneumonia and its complications. Went into the hospital on New Year's Day. And all people have been talking about on social media, commenting on this, were his eclectic range of topics and guests. You know, politics and world affairs and academics and art and business and cooking. You never knew.
Well, the opening would always go, Andrea brought this up, but the opening would go, welcome to the program this evening, the fall of the Roman Empire and Urkel. Live in studio.
But first, some commercial obligations.
Right.
Good evening.
Right. Yeah, it was you know, quite a show. Then, and even after he was off the air, continued with a podcast that I'm told was extremely popular.
Yeah, it was.
People just really enjoyed his interview style. You know, I admired it greatly, but I'm not going to lie. I always felt just a little dumber every time I listened to the show.
Everybody did. I'll tell you one of my favorite dumb stories, because we love needling each other. And I decided after a few years here that Extension 720 was too nerdy a title. So I went to Milt and I said, yeah, Extension 720. You ever thought about just calling it the Milt Rosenberg Show? And he looked up, his glasses just slightly down on his nose, and he went, 35 years, it seems to be working.
That's
awesome. He could just needle.
Can you
right
leave
back.
Can you leave my office now, please, Mr. Cochran?
You were one of the few that were like really got him to loosen up a little bit.
Yeah, no, we had a good time. Yeah. We did. And we never got a chance to make our show. Milt wanted to do a two-man show called Smart and Dumber, and I was going to be the dumber.
No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah, that was the casting.
Unbelievable. It's not possible.
We'll get back with 90, Dean's.
92 years old.
Yeah, what a run, huh?
Yeah, 92 years old.
Celebrate that life.
You'll be calling his name. Dean Richer, the entertainment editor. Channel 972.
Again, Dean, if we could just reach out to the boss, Paul Rennie, boss of both of these stations, yours and mine.
Very handsome man.
Yeah. Would you please promote the new show?
Which show is that?
The Thomas Sulo Show.
Does he have a new show?
Oh, come on. Help the kid out.
I saw his set the other day at Channel 9. It's very cool.
Well, I wish him nothing but luck.
Yeah, he's going to do great.
Is Thomas Sulo asked to come on here yet, Sandberg? To Thomas Sulo, we'll put him on at some point to plug the show.
Yeah, we will.
Well, we'll see.
Hey, by the way, they're doing the wrap around the cars, too. Have you seen those? Mm-hmm. A lot of the cars driving around now?
Yeah, they did it to the Tahoe.
White Lightning.
Yeah, when I did.
Oh, my God. I'm like a Pavlov's dog.
All right. Harvey Weinstein got slapped.
He was in a restaurant in Scottsdale, Arizona, which is very near the treatment center where he is going through rehab right now for sexual addiction. You think he's got a problem? He was having dinner there. Some guy comes up to him and asks if he could take a picture with him. Weinstein turns him down for that offer. And then when he was leaving, the guy approaches Weinstein and slaps him in the face a couple of times and unleashes a string of expletives.
We have no video of this?
There actually is video.
Yeah, of course there is.
Of course there is video of it. Somebody shot it. TMZ got the video, and it's so if you want to see it, it's up on. We're showing it this morning on WGN. But it's on TMZ.com if you want.
Of course it is.
To take a look at it.
When my sister was dating
her. Just sort of gets whacked in the face, like kind of back of the hand, whack, whack. kind of thing on its face. And he gets out, he hightails it.
Not the right way to act in a restaurant, but he had it coming. Sandberg?
When my sister was dating her ex-husband, they were at dinner, and a girl came over and threw a glass of wine at him and hit him. And Katie, my sister, was like, can you believe that crazy girl? I'm like, this is a sign that he does not treat girls well.
Yeah. Yeah. If you got women running up there at a restaurant just to attack you, you may want to go on a different date. Yeah.
Katie was blindly in love.
Am I the only one not hearing Mary?
Oh.
Oh, you're not picking it up? I don't know. The rest of the audience is.
Okay.
Do you not speak, Sandberg?
Doesn't sound like a...
I thought you meant, do you not speak Sandberg, like it's a language?
No, that's what I'm saying.
Oh,
it's a separate language. It's Rosetta Stone.
I'm just not hearing her microphone on.
That's odd.
Maybe some weird technical thing.
Okay.
We're going to have to adjust.
That's because I made up whatever I didn't hear her just say.
Yeah, right. We had a conversation on one side.
Right.
James Franco. I think you and I talked about this yesterday.
Well, there's some new information about this that is disturbing. He, you know, there was that series of tweets that came out from actress Ally Sheedy, which have now been, that Ally Sheedy now has removed.
During the Golden Globes, saying negative, hinty things about James Franco winning.
Specific, but don't ask me why I got out of showbiz after working with James Franco. And then there had been previous allegations of Franco with sexual misconduct in the past. But yesterday, five women have come forward, five women who were former students of his at his now-closed acting school, who say that they were asked to participate in scenes in plays and little indie movies that he was making that would require them to undress or perform simulated sexual acts. Franco's representatives are saying that the new charges are untrue. On Monday, Franco was on Stephen Colbert and said that charges that have been posted online, we assume referring to these now, are untrue. So these five women have come forward with very explicit, specific details of what they went through. I'm sure we're going to be hearing more about this.
And Seth Meyers asked the question of Franco, who was a guest of his last night, that I asked yesterday, and that's, if Ally Sheedy said that about me, I would pick up the phone and I would call Ally Sheedy and go, what are you talking about?
Absolutely.
Because he apparently hasn't tried to contact her, which, you know, it's not hard to make the leap then that maybe he's hiding something. As Dean says, I'll have to check with my attorneys.
Well,
before.
I mean, I'm not sure that I would. If somebody was making false claims about me, I'm not sure that I would respond and, ratify their charges.
If it was someone you knew and someone you worked with?
Yeah,
I think you'd call them.
I think, you know, maybe I would. Maybe I would. They worked together 10 years ago. I'm not defending them in any way, but...
I think you call him, email him, text him, and fax him.
Why did Ally Sheedy take the tweets down?
I don't know.
Why wasn't she more specific?
Don't know.
Why this very strange, mysterious three tweets as well? So,
but your life becoming unraveled.
Right.
Defend yourself in a way that you can defend yourself. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
Especially with more than, not just Ally Sheedy now. There's
right.
more. There's
right.
more.
Right. 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 So,
yeah, I think these are much more serious than Ally Sheedy, sending out three bizarre tweets.
How about some good news? Ricky Martin got married?
Got married to his longtime boyfriend. They met. They got engaged, rather, on Ellen DeGeneres' show. And he revealed that they've now made it legal. They're going to have a big party in about 3 months. If you guys want to go in, I was going to send him a salad shooter.
That's fantastic.
I'm ending.
A gift. We can just, send our best wishes to them.
Oh, fantastic. No, good for that. And the Game of Thrones Hotel. Why would anyone want to stay there?
Oh, my God. Why wouldn't you?
Why? Well, wait till you hear what the hotel is like. It's in it's in Finland, and it's a hotel which is made entirely of snow and ice.
Oh, I'm out.
It is the Lapland Hotel there. They call it the Snow Village. Mm. 30 snow-built rooms. You can sleep on a bed made of ice. There is a Braavos Hall of Faces.
Yeah, the Hall of Faces.
I don't know what any of this means.
There is a map.
That's when Aria was with the no-name god.
But is it snow-related on the show, though?
Yeah, because there's a whole... There's the King of the North, and then the wall is constantly... Mm-hmm. You know, it's in this snowbound area.
Oh, yeah, totally.
If you're a
lot
fan,
of snow.
If you're
totally.
A fan... $315 to $420 a night to freeze your butt off.
See, I don't know the show, so it's not fair for me to say, but I figured the Game of Thrones hotel, there's heads on a stick in the lobby, and someone's tortured at noon.
That could be. They always say, the catchphrase is, winter is coming. Mm. And now, with the end of the last season, winter is here.
Winter is here.
At least the drinks are cold.
Everything's cold.
True.
There's a Jack Black story Dean's covered this morning. Very funny in a clip from Colbert that you got to see. But I got to get to your honey of a deal.
Oh, my. Yeah, this is my first big deal of the new year. As a lot of people know, when I'm not here on the radio or the TV, I put on the yellow sport coat and I am a realtor to the stars. Steve, I have got a honey of a deal.
I can't wait. What do you got? What do you got?
This is Suzanne Summers' 73-acre Palm Springs compound.
Wow, 73 acres. That is a lot of thigh masters.
It overlooks the rocky hills of the Palm Springs area. Trying to find the bedroom count here. Doesn't really matter, you know, if it's that large, you can pretty much sleep. Oh, here you go. 8 bedrooms.
Right.
11 baths. And an abundance of space for family and friends. Outdoor amphitheater that's carved into the mountains. A meditation garden, dance floor, pool, spa, hiking trails.
8 bedrooms, 11 baths. Does she have a lot of people over with stomach problems? That's a lot of bathrooms.
Maybe you want to go to a private room for a little thymester fun.
It's the 11th door on the left.
All right. Now, as always, Dean, I would like to make the first offer on this property. I have gone through my wallet, and I'm ready to offer you right now, and it's a cash offer, $93. That's all the money I have in my wallet. I've got $93.
It's a little low. It's a little
I have
low.
$5. I'll throw that in.
That's $98. Dave, what do you got?
I got about $5.
That's $103, Dean, and that's the highest offer you've received so far.
That is very true. Just a tiny bit shy of the asking price of $35 million. But I'll be happy to submit it, of course.
God, is the money in Hollywood stupid? Suzanne Summers is a lovely woman, and she was always very pleasant whenever we've had her. But outside of Thigh Masters and Three's Company, how do you get a $35 million house?
You sell a lot of Thigh Masters.
That's got to be
Lifetime
it, right?
Movies.
That's got to be it. Everybody in America must have bought a Thigh Master.
Yep. That's how I crack my walnuts.
All right. That's as good a place to wrap as any. Good luck. Good luck to you. And we'll come back with the headlines next. Tonight at 8, Remembering Milt Rosenberg. I would invite you all to listen to that. The question has come up all morning. Will it be podcasted? Yes, it will. But if you can, catch it live tonight at 8. When Milt went into our Walk of Fame, our original class, Rick Hogan and the team here put together a biographical account of Milt to that point. I thought you might like to hear it, and here it is.
WGN Chicago.
Live from downtown Chicago, this is the dedication of the WGN Radio Walk of Fame and the induction of the 2014 honorees on 720 WGN.
Our special from Pioneer Court continues now. Thoughtful talk, cerebral conversation, intelligent interaction and discovery, the most prominent thinkers in the world as guests. A show like that could never work on commercial radio. Well, tell that to Milt Rosenberg. For almost 40 years, starting in 1973, Dr. Rosenberg held down the late night shift at WGN on extension 720. And Milt, I'll try to use some big words in just a minute, I promise. He was always erudite. It's not a bad one, but not stuffy. His wit and humor always came through, whether the topic was foreign policy, world history, science, or the arts. Listening to his show is like attending the most interesting college class in every subject with a teacher who always brought out the most fascinating facts and figures, stories, and sidebars from the guest speakers. And what guests they were. Henry Kissinger, Jimmy Carter, Margaret Thatcher, Norman Mailer, Carl Sagan,
Colin Powell, David Brinkley, just to name a few. And I think the best, the most satisfying aspect to those interviews Milt conducted was there never was a wasted question, never a wasted moment. Every second counted and was meaningful in some way. I doubt if any other radio station in the country ever employed a host who was a PhD or a recipient of the National Humanities Medal. Milt, of course, is both and more. Professor emeritus at the University of Chicago, author, and now an official WGN radio legend. Milt, thanks for helping make WGN unique in the world of radio, for steering our nighttime ship through your thoughtful and refined sea of intelligent conversation for all those years. As President George Bush said in 2008 when he gave you that medal, we appreciate how you brought the world of ideas to millions of listeners. And now, folks, get your thesaurus out and ready as we welcome Milt Rosenberg to the WGN Radio Walk of Fame.
Dr. Rosenberg, I don't know if you're taking questions. One of the great things about Milt is that he would honor the presence of anyone who was of an equal intellect, such as myself. So, Milt, when you the rumor is you would hire producers only after they passed a basic knowledge test. A, is that true? And B, is there any question that I could get correct?
Yes. No, probably not. But I could give you one of the questions.
All right, one of the questions, Bob. This is the lightning round.
I have to look at Kathy and Judy's hands where the answers are written.
Yes, what is the question, Doctor?
Name three British authors of the 19th century.
Three British authors of the 19th century.
We're out of time for Dr. Rosenberg,
That's
but thank
shame.
You very much.
The only one I could think of is the one that did the Harry Potter books.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. More professor or talk show host? What would you describe your career as?
Professor of talk show hosting. One of the most fascinating programs we did it every year, at least once, was Adventures in the Talk Trade. You participated a number of times.
Yes, I did, as a matter of fact.
This is how you hold a microphone.
Yes, it's his first day.
Well, you guys at radio really
I'm putting that
show.
On my resume that I showed Dr. Milton Rosenberg how to use the microphone.
Well, I used to get a real microphone on a desk, you know.
That's true.
Where were we?
You were talking about your fabulous career and how much you appreciated what I do.
More professor or talk show host. The real measure of that is that I finally resigned from the university and stayed with the radio. I went emeritus, as they call it, which means you're retired as a professor some 10 years ago. I didn't go emeritus in radio till about 2 years ago.
And you are still doing it, by the way. You should know your podcasts are available now.
They are, for a small price.
Milt needs a new pair of shoes. Bob, a final question for Milt?
Well, Milt, I've always wondered about the shows you like to listen to on radio. Were there any?
Well, that was one of them, talking with talk show hosts about the nature of this trade.
Were there other shows, though, that you listened to?
Well, inevitably, we were deeply drawn into politics and the confusion and the controversy and the cacophony of American politics. So we did a lot of that. Dick Ciccone, who used to be managing editor up in this building, was one of my great guests, together with three other guys. We sort of comprised the A-team. And the A-team is still with me on the weekly podcast that we do. We're now doing it again from WGN Studios, and it's posted up on the WGN website, as I understand it.
Well, I think that's fair enough. The answer to that question, Milt's favorite show was Extension 720.
There
Simple
you are.
As that. And so was ours. Congratulations, Milt.
Thank you very much.
And that was a great day, great
That's
memory,
excellent.
The original class, and Milt Rosenberg tonight, remembering Milt at 8 o'clock.
So in his honor, three British authors from the 21st century.
Dr. Seuss.
Okay. And that could be correct, I don't know.
19th century. Good evening. Tonight, thermodynamics and children's birthday parties featuring Silly String. It was always that.
Always.
Metaphysics and my favorite recipe for tater tots tonight.
Yeah, exactly.
On Extension 720.
My favorite, again, was the...
What a guy.
The first hour would be the ancient Minoan civilization, and the second hour was this revolutionary new show called Sex in the City.
How about...
legitimate.
That was an actual topic, yeah. And I won't even... get into the Sex and the City talk with Milt was fantastic.
Jane Austen, Charles Dickens. How about Walter Scott?
Nice job, Google.
Yeah, right there at the top.
But I should mention, by the way, the other voice you heard besides Milt and me was Bob Surratt, the great Bob Surratt.
Mm-hmm.
You might remember, did those ceremonies with me the first couple of years.
Yeah.
Imagine a world free of lung disease. Help us realize a vision. You know, and ability to see your own future can make a difference. Here's what you need to do. Help us out. Join Dave Ennett and the WGN radio team for the American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb at Presidential Towers. That's presented by United Healthcare. It's Sunday. Dave, write this down. Sunday, March 11th.
Sunday, March 11th.
You can climb 1, 2, 3, or all four
all
towers.
Four.
And you've done all four. Year you've done it, I think.
Yeah, last 3 years.
Yeah, yeah. That's 2,340 steps. We know that Mary Vandeveld is committed to this.
Mm-hmm.
She will be there.
I just signed up.
Yep.
That's 12 towers I've climbed.
That's a lot. And we also know that I won't be there, but I will write a check.
I will do the same.
Take the first step and register today at fightforairclimb.org. Those are great people. They really are. They're great people to do this kind of year. And thank you, Dave, for doing it. 312-781-1100. That's 312-781-1100.
And one of these years, you're going to do it.
Yep, Steve. Absolutely.
One of these years. Holidays and a new year bring cherished moments and smiles we capture forever. This year, we're proud to celebrate our 10th year milestone of the famous WGN Chicago personalized calendars. A favorite gift among our listeners, this year's calendars are completely redesigned with a fresh new look and feel by our friends at 2Ks. And with all new stunning photography of our beautiful city, you can personalize any name you want with authentic realism. Imagine your recipient's name and prominent landmarks creatively illustrated in every month. Available now at WGNradio.com. Give these calendars to coworkers, family, and friends. It's a practical and useful gift used every day. Something your gift recipient will always remember you by. Go to WGNradio.com and scroll down to the featured section to order yours today. 2018 Epic Calendars for an Epic Year.
It is 8:55. I want to say hi again to our new friend, Ashley Byhan, and not just because we may need her. When she's a broadcast executive.
She might be our boss someday.
She's doing a fine job at Lewis University as a program director / manager of what radio station?
WLRA.
WLRA. Yes, the only radio station I haven't been fired from. But Ashley, since you're here, I thought this is a great opportunity. Well, first, you don't want to say hi to family, friends, boyfriend, anybody?
Hi, family, friends. No boyfriend.
Really?
So all the men out there, hello. No, I'm just kidding. Just kidding.
Ashley, work in the room.
The power of the microphone.
Look at you.
Yeah, right.
But you have an opportunity here. We have sports, news, traffic represented, producing, or we like to call her the boss, and whatever I do. So do you have any questions about the business?
Out of this, everyone in this group, who is the earliest and who is usually the latest?
Oh, I can answer for the latest. Yes. The latest would be me. I don't know who the earliest is because I'm the latest.
I would say it's either Mary and Joe. They're here very early.
No, I think Dave Ennett and Mary Vandeveld.
Yeah, we're in around 4:30 on the air at 5. But Joe's in before
Joe's
I get
about 3:30.
Yeah, Joe's probably the
Joe's
one.
The earliest.
What
Joe
time do you get in, Joe?
I haven't left.
Believe it.
All right, what else?
What was, when you guys were first getting started, what was the scariest thing that ever happened to you in the business? Mm. Like, did you say something bad on the air? Mm-hmm. What, did you meet somebody wrong and you were like, ooh.
Like, what do you got?
I said something wrong.
I have something that I learned really well. I was in college and I was an intern at a radio station in Champaign, and they let us go to city council. I mean, it doesn't sound fun, but we went to city council meetings and county board meetings to kind of learn how these meetings are covered. So I went to one and they argued for 4 hours about whether or not to reopen this bridge in town. And so they voted to reopen the bridge. 4 hours later, I left the meeting, went back, wrote up the stories. My boss, the news director, called the next day and said, yeah, you left the meeting, didn't you? I said, yeah, but they argued for 4 hours about whether or not to close this bridge and reopen it. They reopened it. He said, yeah, the mayor resigned at the end of the meeting.
Wow.
So I learned never, I mean, I was a teenager, I was an intern, but I thought,
right,
I learned
but you missed the story. You missed the story and you reported the wrong story.
No, I reported the right story. I just didn't.
You didn't have the big story.
I didn't have the big story, exactly. So I learned very early, I don't leave a meeting.
Sandberg, you got something in this area?
One time I gave Steve Dahl a sandwich that had mayonnaise on it.
And he lost his mind?
Yeah. He doesn't eat mayonnaise, so.
Yeah.
So even though I had ordered it without mayonnaise, I did not double check that there was no mayonnaise on it.
No, I never asked Sandberg to get me food.
No, what was your story?
I was his assistant, so, I mean, it was the role of the assistant.
Okay, right.
Don't defend it.
Yeah.
I dropped the F-bomb on the air inadvertently twice. In my second job, there was a punk record out. This is in 1982. And it was It's All Right to Blank All Night. And the salesperson who thought it was hilarious came in. This is when we played actual records, vinyl. Came in and we were laughing it up. Oh, what a funny title. And the entire time, I probably said the title five times. He probably said the title five times and the microphone was on. And I realized it after. I could still remember the song. The song was by a one-hit wonder group called Sneaker. And the song was called More Than Just the Two of Us. You never heard of either, but it stuck in my mind because of this. And the owner of the radio station in Elmira, New York, WENY, the owner of the radio station went to a small church, and his pastor at the church had just gotten a shower radio. And the shower radio was big technology back then. You could listen to the radio in the shower. And while he was listening to me, and I dropped the F-bomb twice, he cut his neck shaving. I could have killed his pastor. And yet that wasn't the first time I was fired.
Oh, God.
They gave me a break. How about that? Right, you got one more? 1981, is that what you said? Sneaker, more than just two?
Yeah.
So it was right, 82.
Let's play some of it right now.
Yeah.
No, it's not.
Have you guys always been on talk radio, or were you at one point on FM radio?
I was a disc jockey. Yeah, I was a disc jockey.
It started out as a DJ and moved to news.
Dave?
I worked in all news radio.
Hmm. At that dump BBM, is that where you were?
Yes, as a matter of fact.
It's a joke, Jimmy. Vandeville?
I worked at, I was news director at a couple different stations in Iowa, a rock station.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, and in northern Wisconsin at an alternative station.
Did not know that. Yeah. I thought you'd been here forever.
Oh, gosh, no.
Alternative to what?
Well, no, it wasn't alternative. What was like soft called back then? What did we call it?
Soft rock.
Soft rock, sure.
Yeah, I guess.
AOR.
They played such old stuff.
Remember AOR?
Oh, Easy Listening?
Easy Listening, yeah. It was kind of, well, wasn't as easy listening. What soft rock I'd go more with.
Steve, what about you?
Yeah, my first job, I was a disc jockey on Sunday nights at WFRX in West Frankfort. We
not Frankfurt, West Frankfurt.
We played the Carpenters and Air Supply and that kind of stuff.
Did you have a cool DJ name, Steve?
No, it was Steve Grzyanich.
Oh, that's no fun.
Yeah, he should have been like Super G.
Right.
Mixmaster G.
Or the Grizzly Bear.
Right.
Yeah. Sandberg?
Well, I was with Talk Radio first, and then I had a stint for 3 years at B96.
Oh.
Yep.
Yeah, working for Dahl was your first job, right?
Yeah. Well, I technically worked for Kevin Matthews first, but then he was taken off the air, and then we flipped to a music station where I heard a lot of Linkin Park, like that kind of whatever
rock.
That alternative music. Yeah.
Yeah,
I didn't care for that. Plus, they made us wear purple T-shirts, and I don't like wearing purple T-shirts.
I was, of course, awesome. You don't. I was a disc jockey, and probably technically until 1999, but probably more realistically until about 1990-91. But you have
that's a difference between 20 or 30 years ago.
The reason I say that because starting in 1991, I started getting more regularly fired because I stopped playing the music I was supposed to play and I talked more.
Right.
So that's why the gap. But you know what you want to do? Do you have any idea? Thinking long term?
I definitely want to be on the radio side, more so behind the scenes and content creation is where I would like to go. But I know it's whatever you get, you got to roll with it and then see where you go from there. So,
well, it's a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me on.
And if we can help you in any other way, let us know.
All right, I will. Thank you.
Stick around. By the way, wave to any of these cameras, Ashley. You're on TV right now at CLTV. Is your mom or dad listening?
Yeah, my mom's definitely on. My dad's working right now, so I don't think he's tuning in. But
probably good because if your dad had heard you say "hello, men,"
he
probably would have been a rough.
He would have flipped. My mom is probably like, "Woo, yeah, get it."
If your mom said, woo, yeah, get it, we want to meet your mom.
Oh, yeah. She's a hoot.
Joe, what do I need? A break here? Or we, yep. Quick break. We're back with the news on CLTV and 720 WGN. We say hi to Bob Serrata and Marianne Marciano.
Yeah. Hi, Bob and Marianne.
Yeah. I don't know if they're watching or listening right now, but they should be.
Yeah. And we sampled.
We love them.
We do. And we sampled Marianne's special corn recipe. Remember, she used to make the corn souffle.
She's a great cook.
Yeah. We had it at the our news Christmas lunch.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Recipe that she passed on to us. Yeah, it was delicious.
Okay. Serrat cook at all, Bob?
I don't know. Marianne's the cook, but I'm sure Bob cooks a little bit, I bet. Yeah.
Three straight on. Goal! Counter's no good. Ball game over, and the Wildcats win.
I'm sorry, Dave, was that driving you a little nuts when I sang it?
Well, I wouldn't call that singing, exactly.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Northwestern basketball slapped around Minnesota last night. Hopefully you were listening. Indiana, Ohio State, and Penn State still to come before they take another swing at Minnesota there. You know, we're in the heart of the season now, and Coach Chris Collins joins us now. Hello, old friend. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. I've missed you.
And you as well. You as well. Nice game last night.
Yeah, I was really happy, really proud of the guys. We've had our ups and downs this season. And I just thought last night we really got back to playing with great energy, great spirit, great passion. And, you know, that's what it's going to take if you want to win in the Big Ten.
I know there's, you know, you're not a guy that makes excuses or allows excuses, but has there been an adjustment to the building issue?
Well, yeah, there definitely has been an adjustment. And, you know, that being said, the people at Allstate have been awesome. You know, they've done everything that they can to try to make it a great home court for us with the court and the surroundings and everything. But, you know, when you don't have the opportunity to play right on your campus and be at home and get that home atmosphere, it does make a difference. You know, it adds to the wear and tear of the guys a little bit. Pretty much every game is a road game. You know, you're traveling on buses and hotels and things like that. So we really don't talk about it. We know it is what it is. We're trying to make the most of it. And, you know, a game like last night, you know, was one to put a smile on our face. Hopefully we can, you know, use that as a little springboard here for us in the next few games.
Before we get the voice of Northwestern basketball and football in here, the great Dave Bennett, on the net last night after the game, and I'm not talking about the net on the rims, one of the main questions that came up was this. Chris Collins' shirt is untucked. Coach's shirt is untucked.
I know. I saw the picture after. I was so ingrained in the game, I really didn't even know. I was in the fight with the guys last night, and trust me, I've seen some of the pictures. You know, it's the John Travolta look with the collar and the untucked shirt. So, not sure how that look will go going forward. But for last night, it worked. That's all that matters, right?
Yeah, exactly. What if it's the good luck untucked shirt look? Huh? Right now, I did
if
not
that's
see.
The case, then I'll go back to it.
Exactly. I did not see the pictures, Dave. You were there.
Yes.
Did you notice the untuck?
Well, I was really watching the game,
you were.
Steve, but I did notice that Coach Collins and his staff came out, and I talked to him, I don't know, 90 minutes before the game, and when they came out, and I hadn't really noticed, they weren't wearing ties. Now, he's always impeccably dressed during a game. They're on TV, you know, all coaches, you got to have the nice suit on and everything.
Not anymore.
He didn't have a tie.
Not anymore.
So, Joey Meyer immediately says, well, if they win tonight, you know they're going to burn those ties.
I actually had a really nice tie on. I felt like I was looking like $1 million, but it was one of those game time decisions. I knew it was a big game for us, and trying to get a little fire into the guys, shedded it before the tip, and ended up being a good luck charm. So we'll see what happens going forward.
Well, the real good luck charm, and Steve, this was a cool story that happened last night. Bryant McIntosh, senior guard for the Wildcats, their all-time assist leader, and 2 games ago, he suffers a knee injury, and everybody's fearing the worst.
Sure.
It happened. It looked bad, and he couldn't finish the game. And he came back Friday night against Penn State. Last night, he had 16 assists. Now, Let's put that into perspective. That's tied for the fourth most in a game in Big Ten history.
It's amazing.
Not only did he have 16 assists, he had zero turnovers.
Wow.
And he broke the record held by, Chris, one of your former assistant coaches, now the head coach of Milwaukee, Patrick Baldwin. And the funny thing was that McIntosh had 14 assists in a game 2 years ago, and you took him out. And he said that it was partly because you knew that record was within his grasp.
There's no question. The first text I got when I grabbed my phone was from Pat Baldwin, you know, yelling at me for leaving him in the game those last couple minutes to get the record. So Brian was fantastic last night, and, you know, it was a memorable performance, and just really proud of him and, you know, what he's meant to our program these last 4 years. And like you said, sometimes, I mean, 10 days ago, you know, he goes down and he hurts a knee, and we don't know how severe it is, if it was going to be the last we would have seen of him in a Northwestern uni. So once we knew it was just a sprain and he was going to get back, I've noticed a little more bounce into his step. I think he knows now in these last 6-7 weeks, you know, to putting on that Northwestern jersey and finishing this journey, he really wants to make the most of it, and he was fantastic last night.
You know, it's hard to believe you're only 5 games into the Big Ten season. You still have 13 conference games left, and you lose a game here and there, and everybody immediately points to where you are now and what the prospects are and what the outlook is, and it's like it changes game to game. It's unbelievable. Yeah. And it's not just you. I mean, it's all of college basketball. When a team wins, everything's great. When a team loses, everybody's hanging black crepe around and looking for a way out.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's kind of the nature of sports now, with just all the attention and the media that's involved and social media. And what we try to talk to with the guys is it's never as great as it seems after a big win, and it's certainly never as bad as it seems after a really tough loss or a couple of losses. And we're just trying to keep plugging along, you know, and take what's in front of us. I know it's a crazy cliche and I hate it, but, you know, it's really about the next game. And, you know, last night was very important, got us back to 2-3 in the conference. We have another great opportunity this weekend. We go to Bloomington and play Indiana. If you can find a way to win that game and get to 500 in the league, you're right back where a lot of teams are going to be when the dust settles. Yep. At the end of this week, there's going to be a lot of 3-3 teams. That's the way our parity is in our league. And so, you know, it's an important stretch for us. Every game is super important, and you just got to keep going with what's in front of you and not get too caught up in the big picture when you play in a great league like the Big Ten.
You mentioned cliches. One of the most annoying cliches in sports is a sense of urgency. But it's considering the bumps early and where you guys find yourself now, between now and tournament time, is it good to play with a sense of urgency, or does that take you guys out of your game?
No, we definitely need to play with a sense of urgency, and not a sense of desperation, but a sense of urgency.
Good point.
And, you know, and that's something that we've talked about as a team. And, you know, it just boils down. We have a veteran group. We've had a lot of guys who've played a lot of games, and sometimes there's a tendency, you know, to lose some of your youthful exuberance and your youthful spirit. And, you know, I think that's the main thing we've tried to get back is, let's play with that joy, that urgency, you know, that fire and passion that's helped us build our program over the last couple of years. And what was really fun about last night is, as I saw that, and, you know, win or lose, I'm a happy guy if I see my guys out there competing the way they did last night.
And one of the most amazing plays that happened in the game ended up not counting, and that was Gavin Skelly, your senior, goes up for a dunk, misses the dunk, but while hanging on the rim, grabs the rebound and dunks it in. Of course, that ends up being a technical foul. But, Chris, didn't that remind you of watching Steve on the court?
It's a lot like that.
The athleticism.
Actually, in the throes of such a big game, and as soon as that happened, it was the first thing that came to my mind. You know, it just was.
That's the second thing, right after tuck in my shirt.
Yeah, true. Well, obviously not, because it remained untalked. It was all that was on my mind, and it reminded me of seeing you gracefully fly around our court last year when we were out there shooting some shots.
To just name one other cliche I'm really tired of, I overcame a lot of adversity.
So you're throwing them all out today, all my favorite ones.
Oh, for sure. Indiana, Northwestern at Indiana Sunday. Pregame, Dave?
That'll be at 3:15, right after Blackhawks hockey.
Catch every Northwestern game here where it belongs on 720 WGN. Coach, good talking to you.
Awesome. Always great being on the show. See you guys soon.
Viva Las Vegas is a fabulous, fabulous idea. We're looking for the ultimate Blackhawks fan.
By the way, you look great in an Elvis suit.
I got to say, white is not necessarily my color. But
I'm telling you, that was a good look, though.
Yeah, I thought
you.
We all pulled it off.
Yeah.
And looked at the three of you and pulled it off. Seemed like the wrong thing to be thinking.
Oh, that was fun. We did a little photo shoot yesterday.
Steva, Las Vegas. Hit the jackpot with your best Blackhawks snapshot. It's all we need is a picture. Now, if you want to send a video, you know, of your Blackhawks man cave or woman cave, along with a picture, that's fine. But just get us a picture. Get us a picture of something that illustrates and demonstrates why you are the ultimate Hawks fan. And you want a trip for two to Las Vegas. You can see the Blackhawks and the Golden Knights of Las Vegas on February 13th. Dave, I would be hard-pressed to find a more successful expansion team in its first year. Still in first place.
They got off to the best start of any expansion team in history.
Not just in the NHL, any of the major sports. I can't think of an expansion team that's done better.
First year? Yeah, that's probably true. But certainly in the NHL, I mean, they've pretty much shattered that record.
It's crazy. WGNradio.com/contest means you can watch the Blackhawks play the Golden Knights of Vegas. And then before the game, you and I are going to be on with Justin Kaufman.
Yeah, we are. It's going
to
be fun.
And we'll do like a 90-minute run-up to the game. And then the next morning when Pete's filling in on this show, we'll jump on with Pete until you desert me and go to the airport.
No, it's not going to be like that. Well, it will be like that, actually.
Just a little bit. WGNradio.com/contest. Enter today for Steva Las Vegas. We need a break for the news. I'll come back with the news next. 720 WGN.
Live from the Allstate Showcase Studio, this is the Steve Cochran Show on Chicago's very own 720 WGN.
You keep saying you got something for me.
You know why we're playing this, don't you?
I love this song.
But you know why we're playing it?
I do, because, well, yeah, studio.
Wendy Snyder's favorite go-to karaoke hit.
It's not even karaoke. I do it myself. This is my go-to song when I perform.
Let's hear it.
Come on, give it up.
I'm not doing it here. You turn the music up.
That's what they'll do. One of these days, these boots are gonna walk all over you.
Nice. Woo! Well done.
Yeah, that's my go-to song. I used to sing with Buzz Kelvin's band, and that was like my go-to song, that and the theme from Beretta.
I forgot that you could sing. You got a great voice.
I like to sing. Yeah. It's okay. I have taken lessons. I should take lessons again.
Yeah. I always thought, we all love Buzz, but I always thought he dressed really slutty in those gigs. Didn't you? Yeah, that was the one thing that drove me nuts about Buzz. Nice to see you back, for one thing. But aside from that, we wanted to take a few minutes to do a blatant plug for the Bill and Wendy show. Now, who's working with you today?
Judy Pilek is back in action.
Nice.
And where's Lef?
He is at a toy symposium somewhere.
Of course he is.
Metropolitan area.
Before you guys started working together, what was it, back in Q101? Was that the first time?
No, The Loop.
It was The Loop.
It was The Loop at night.
That's when I would listen to you guys, and it was Wendy and Bill.
Yes.
Remember?
Because I always used to
love you guys.
I always used to joke with Bill about the fact that, you know, how many dates in and was she already hooked before you told her about the toys? Didn't you have to see the toys before you went on the air with them? At what point did you meet the toys?
Well, I am married to Jimmy Mack, who also has toys.
You're attracted to immature men.
You know what? I guess my name being Wendy, I'm attracted to the Peter Pan type men.
Yes.
But no, I didn't see Bill's toys. Much like my husband's, it's like, oh yeah, you guys have toys. That's cute.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know to the extent of it. And actually, Bill Lef, when I first did see his toy collection, his rooms, his amazing world of toys.
You have no idea what this collection is like. It is unbelievable.
Those are like velvet ropes.
And I don't mean unbelievable. Like I'm so jealous. I wish you had them. I mean, it's unbelievable in the amount, the volume that he has, and the pristine condition they're in.
Like they're on display in cabinets.
Yeah, I think there's something at WGNradio.com because he was on the WGN Morning News.
Oh, did he put pictures up?
There's video.
Oh, I didn't.
Yeah, I think TV did something.
Oh, okay, I did not know that.
Jeff Hoover and Mike Toomey were there, I believe, at his house,
trying to play with the toys,
trying to steal them.
Yes,
because they like them too. But you don't imagine how exciting this is, and they're on display for all the world to see. And then we went to a Christmas party, both Jimmy Mack and I, at Bill's house. And on the way home, Jim stopped at his parents' house and said, "Mom, where are all my action figures that I had when I was a kid?" And thanks to Bill, we now have a Star Wars room at our house.
Well, I thought you were going to punchline that with Mom threw them out. That's the usual way that story ends. Yeah.
No, she saved them, thank God.
How about that?
In the boxes, you mean, too?
No, Jim played with his toys. Bill doesn't. Bill displays them.
Yeah, because I played with my Star Wars toys, too. Well,
toys are meant to be played with.
By the way, that's a phrase of Pace. Jim played with his toys. So if you want to stick close.
And Bill just stares at his.
Yeah, he does.
Yeah.
Yeah, I actually felt like I had to maintain a safe distance away from them. Like an alarm would go off. Steve, you've seen them, right? Steve Bertrand?
The toys?
You've seen the toys, haven't you?
Oh, my God, yeah.
Yeah.
It's pretty amazing. Come on.
It's very... What bothers me is the yellow line on the floor that you can't cross.
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Right.
Sounds like my mother's living room, though.
It's like a Mission Impossible movie. You have to drop in upside down and hang from something because there's motion detectors.
Right. Bill has trust issues. I'll tell you that.
So, but obviously it didn't scare you away. We're a little nostalgic with Milt Rosenberg passing away. So I knew half the backstory with how you guys got together, but not the full one. And I think you guys have never sounded better.
Thank you. One of the best radio partners. I might even say the best radio partner I've ever had.
Well, let's go through them. Who else did you work with? A lot of Chicago legends.
Tony Fitzpatrick.
Tony's a good guy.
Fantastic artist and all around Renaissance man.
Just a whack job, but a good guy.
Yeah, he was like the big brother that bugged me all the time, and I was the bratty little sister to him.
There you go.
But that was fun. Worked with Buzz Kilman, Chet Kopick for a while.
Is that right? I did not know that.
I did news for him. That's all. Kevin Matthews.
Right. We love Kev.
Steve Dahl.
Right.
You know, I know you're naming all guys, and that's the thing, but you don't realize how influential that you are, because when I heard you were coming here, I was almost in tears, wasn't I, Steve? I'm like, Wendy Snyder? No! Because you...
I love Wendy Snyder.
I did. I said, really? There's a chance she might come here, and Steve's like, all right, calm down, weirdo. He did.
Well, I was a fan of yours as well. And Steve, I've listened to you on numerous radio stations.
Well, that would be the phrase, wouldn't it? On numerous radio stations. But thank you for that.
And Dave, I listened to you. It's just, really, this is just the
place
to be.
But you were like two at that time, right?
No, I'm old.
Couldn't just be nice.
I'm not going to play that way, Dave.
Thank you, Wendy.
Now, here's the other thing. I know
White Lightning.
When you guys started doing the noon hour. I know it was kind of maybe a little hard to wrap your head around it, but you do this cyber hour, this web hour at noon every day, which has popped a little bit, right? Doesn't it have a pretty good following now?
Absolutely. I mean, you know, a lot of times people are having lunch at that time anyway. So some people listen live in their cars with us while they're eating their sandwich. And some people just go and listen to the download of it, the podcast of it.
And let's face it, there's nothing else on the radio at the time.
I know, really. That Wintrust business lunch. Wow.
You would have done the business lunch with Steve, but he told you guys to get out. Is that accurate?
Can I tell you, I would have done it with him because Steve does a great job.
Yes, he does.
Making it, entertaining it. It's not all businessy. It's entertaining as well. So take that as a compliment, Bertrand.
Thank you.
Yeah, unlike other places in town, it is entertaining.
Still not as good as the bonus hour at WGN Plus.
Since you guys came back, you got a favorite moment that you tell people when they go, what do you do?
A favorite one moment?
Yeah.
I'm just honored to be at this radio station.
It's pretty cool, isn't it?
It is the pinnacle. It is the radio station that we as rock jocks, I heard you earlier saying, you know, you were a DJ, as was I. Mm-hmm. You make fun of the station because it's like, okay, it's our parents' station. We are our parents.
Yeah.
So we've grown up, and this radio station has accommodated us.
Well, you're way younger than me.
Not that much.
But I don't know if you ever went through this, but I remember when I met Bob Collins. Dave, your experience may have been different. Bob was not a warm guy around me, but why would he be? I didn't really know him, you know, when he had his accident. But Bob kicked my ass for years. And I mean, just brutally. And I thought, well, I'm doing a pretty good show at whatever station I was at the time. And I never really went off the beam picking on GN, but I had the same feelings you had. It's like, what? How is this? Why? How? It's the consistency and the loyalty of this audience and delivering Chicago day after day after day for, what, 90 plus years?
Yep. It's tradition. It's just what you grow up with, and that's what you...
Right, and I think the local piece is big.
I think that
is Chicago.
I think that's key. We all grew up listening to it.
It's tradition.
I remember my father used to call into Bob Collins' show and try and get on the air and win something. So, yeah, I mean, we all grew up listening and are thrilled to be a part of it.
Pretty exciting. And thank you for letting me be a part of CLTV today. I charge extra if I'm going to be on TV. I already look and make sure I looked okay. I like hiding behind a microphone, so.
You know the union minimum? You get the Steve Cochran minimum.
What's that?
Well, that's what you have now.
Can I ask Wendy, as long as we have Wendy, can I ask Wendy, your first radio station, or your first job in radio?
Ever?
And who were your influences? Who'd you grow up listening to that you thought...
All right. My very first job was at WEAW. It was an AM Christian ethnic station in Northbrook, which was a house off of Dundee Road. And I used to have to get there at 6 a.m., turn on the transmitter, and then I would run across the street because there was a deli over there, and I would get a corned beef sandwich for later on while it was warming up. And then I would play Christian rock for a couple hours, and then I would engineer a polka show for an hour, and then I would engineer and board up a Croatian hour.
Wow.
That was actually 2 hours, and I don't know how to say two in Croatian. So that was my very first paid radio job.
How about that?
Wow.
Cool. And not that the question matters in any way, but out of curiosity, the best woman you ever heard on the air in Chicago? Best female talent? And it can't be Andrea because she's in the room.
No, come on.
Don't say it, Wendy.
Do it. Oh, do it, Wendy.
I do a kind of like Felicia Middlebrook. She's a tried and true Chicago tradition.
If that Bill thing doesn't work out, let me know, because I feel like I can set you up like nobody's business.
You know, that is so close to Eddie Schwartz.
I can do Eddie as well.
Wow.
I loved that's Eddie. I really have to tell you, when he came to the Loop radio station and left the security of the job he had prior to that, Eddie and I just clicked. He was really a sweet guy. Super sweet.
Yeah, and that full circle shows you the power of Jimmy DeCastro. He can talk people into anything.
How about it?
Yeah, without a doubt. You want to plug today? What do you got coming up? Who's working with you today?
Judy Pilek will be working with us today. The ever mild David Hochberg will be talking to us later on
today.
Hold
on to something.
We're going to talk movies with Dean Richards, and we're also going to explore some of the trends of 2018, things we can look forward to.
Okay, all right. Impeachment in there?
No, but maybe I'll add it to the list. Thank you for having
Wendy
me, by
Snyder,
the way.
Bill and Wendy, 10 to noon, and on the bonus hour, you can find it every day through WGNradio.com.
The Steve Cochran Show.
Oh, mama, don't play now, baby.
On 720 WGN.
Say, now, baby.
Dave wrote this before yesterday's show, and he wasn't going to do it live. I asked him to tape it, and Dave, you've never sounded better.
Yeah, I'm not sure. There's a little too much bass.
I like it when you say the body, though, in a lyric. Didn't he sing a song that had all touching his body or something?
My bedroom smells like you, I think, is where I jumped off the train.
Do a little I'm in love with your body. I'm in love with your body.
You know, you just can't recreate that on the spur.
It was a magic moment.
What, is he your performing monkey, Andrea?
I know. I love when he does it. Come on, one more time.
Judy's joined us as well. How are you?
Good. And, you know, Dave's always wrapping in the sports office there. Why not now?
Because people are listening?
Yeah.
That's why?
You know, you're not in the shower in the sports office. We can hear you, Dave.
I know.
Ice, and it.
That's what we say.
I feel like we missed something today, and the thing I feel like we missed was we haven't talked much about the California mudslides. And I know Steve updated that body count, if you will, a little while ago. There's almost 50
missing,
confirmed dead now. Jeez. And a bunch missing, Judy. Is that accurate?
Yes. 40-something missing still.
It's pretty grim. And there's an individual we all know, and you know, we don't want to talk about somebody's home without their permission, but her family doesn't know if their home's even there. They own a home in the area of California.
It's just incredible when you think about it. I mean, a mudslide covering your home?
No kidding. And the video is just awful to watch. I mean, you can't even walk, literally, without sliding down.
Yeah, and I still don't understand what triggered it. Was it like a monsoon rain?
Yeah, it was a lot of rain. And then, of course, being that area had been devastated by those historic fires,
there weren't any trees.
Because it never happens here, I don't believe, in our area.
We don't have a hill high enough.
Right, we don't have a hill high enough. But yeah, so you've got the hills, you've got all those trees and all that vegetation keeping everything in place, and just some rain takes it all out and causes a mud. I mean, it's just incredible.
It's a very delicate ecosystem out there. It really is.
It really is.
I mean, we have to think about that.
Right? Both good and bad.
Some of the saddest video. There was if you're watching any of the national coverage last night, a guy who lost his mom. And all he wants to do is find her. He knows she's gone. He just wants to find her. And they literally have to dig through feet and feet. Many feet of mud just to recover bodies.
Right, I heard a rescuer saying it's the stick, they use the stick, they poke, and they poke.
Is that right?
Yes.
Wow.
That's how they have to do it.
That's not how it's supposed to be.
No.
I'm sorry.
No, it's, you know, really, California has really had its share of heartache this year.
Yeah, they have.
It's just another one of those where be glad you're here and not there, but say a prayer for them, because, as a matter of fact, I just got an alert on my phone. Number of missing after California mudslides now 49.
Jeez.
And it continues. You guys are next. Before we get to that, thanks MyPillow. Guaranteed to be the most comfortable pillow you'll ever own. MyPillow.com. And thanks to young Ashley Byhan, who was guesting on the program today. She was way too confident, didn't you think?
She was great.
Very comfortable on the air,
I
might
really
add.
Comfortable on the air.
Yeah, probably going to be our boss someday.
Well, I have a feeling she's going to stab somebody in the back and take a show here if we're not careful.
I'm not then turning
around. She'll fit right in.
Yeah, exactly. Welcome to the big time.
Why is she standing behind you?
I'm facing her. I am not turning my back.
I do have mixed emotions about being stabbed in the back because I could use a nap. Wendy and Judy next. See you tomorrow.
This is Chicago's very own 720 WGN Chicago and WGNRadio.com.